I first used the Opera web browser around 2005, and cheers to that company for continuing to bring capable browsing to the less common platforms. While I haven't used Opera GX, the company is taking a deeper step into gaming by acquiring game maker studio maker Yo-Yo Games. Tons of games are built for the web these days, and hopefully Opera is looking to make it even better and easier for users to make and play those games as it should be. This is the story that caught my eye. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, to explain more about this and the rest of the week's gaming news, starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. Orange Lounge Radio live once again tonight, January the 24th of 2021, with the 853rd episode of our show. My name is Rob Roberts, joining you from our studio where we used to tape in person, but for the past year, and obvious reasons, we've been taping through the magic of Discord online. Say hello in her house, in her studio. Say hello to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
What's up?
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right, how are you?
I'm okay. Like, I don't know, I've been sleeping a lot. And like to the point where I think it's kind of unhealthy, actually. So I have to kind of like turn that around. But I think between the weather, the shorter days, the, I don't know, just everything. I don't know. I don't know if it's also some sense of like this great relief has been lifted from our shoulders ever since about Wednesday-ish. like feeling like that always sense of, is today the day that we're, you know, the nukes are going to get used? That whole sense has just kind of like been lifted. So maybe I'm just like catching up on lost sleep. I don't know what it is. But yeah, I'm here. there's my long answer to how I'm doing. I'm here. Okay. And you guys are here. Hi, everyone, over in our chat over at twitch.tv/VOG Network, where we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Black Wolf show. And sometimes we do cute little things that only the live folks see, such as the usage of that Bernie meme that is everywhere. Yeah, I guess I had to work that into the intro of the show tonight. You know what's funny? The thought hadn't even crossed my mind until Bobby like tweeted like, so what Bernie thing are we going to see in the intro this week? And I was like, oh yeah, I guess I kind of have to use that, don't I? Luckily, there were so many Photoshops out there, I didn't need to do one of my own. There was plenty to steal from. So there is that. Anyway, say hello as well to Techmaster Loki. Hey, Loki.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
You ought to be better than fine. I saw your Twitter earlier, and you got some coverage for Pixel Poops this week. I saw what's going on.
Got,
the hype
got one YouTube video. Yeah, so
well, hey, that's something.
The Game Beaters. Yeah,
there's more people that watch that than listen to this, probably. So there's that.
Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, there was, you know, there's more people. But the best part though is at least they're genuinely excited about it. That they, you know, had fun playing it, and there's people like, oh yeah, I, you know, that one's pretty interesting. So at least there wasn't like, that looks like complete dog shit. You know, it's
yeah.
just it was, you know, I don't know. But yeah, it's
cool, nice to have like that validation for the thing you're working on. I get it. It's like the first time we got a nice review in iTunes, and it was kind of like, people do listen to this show. Oh my gosh. Wow. It's kind of a nice feeling. Yeah. So, yeah. So the hype train is starting, for your game, just like it is in our chat right now. Thanks you guys. I don't usually, read out the biddies and the subs until, closer to the end of the show, but since we are taping a podcast here, but I'm sure even the podcasters know that, you can do, donations and stuff on Twitch, and you guys got a hype train going. So thanks you guys. Appreciate that. It's a good week after all. Things are looking up. Things are looking up and down in the news, and up and down and up and down and everywhere. So let's get into the gaming news tonight, and a pretty stunning reversal. Loki, I'm going to throw it to you. What the hell happened, and how fast did it happen?
Microsoft decided that they're going to pull a no disk drive 2.0 type thing, and just out of the blue announced, hey, by the way, you know that Xbox Live Gold that you love? Well, we're going to double its price. Whoops. And so they had made the announcement originally that it was going to, subscriptions were going to go up by, you know, as little as $1 to $11 per month. There was basically the $60 Xbox Live Gold was going to be for now 6 months instead of for 12 months. And that, you know, basically everything was going up. And folks were not happy about that at all. So
can't
basically
imagine why.
Their reasoning was, you know, in many markets, the price of Xbox Live Gold has not changed for years. And in some markets, it has changed for over 10 years. So I don't know how that's necessarily justifying the price increase, but whatever. A lot of people thought it was just to make Games Pass look better as a better deal, especially if it's going to be similarly priced to it. But they quickly walked that back. So not only did they walk it back, but they also decided to now include the free-to-play games, which also, strangely enough, required an Xbox Live Gold account. So if you want to play Fortnite or Roblox or something like that, got to have an Xbox Live Gold account to play those online, despite the fact that on PC or mobile or whatever, you can do that for free. So they now are not including that with Gold. You can just do that without Gold and kind of putting it in line with other platforms. And then, of course, the price.
Although that
gold
change
is,
will be gradual. It's important to note that that is not a switch they're able to flip overnight, but they are committing to ending that practice in the very near future.
Yeah. And then they're also going to be, you know, keeping the price the same as it is right now. So I don't know. I know that there's going to be a change coming at some point, but we'll see what they end up doing with that.
I think, and I'm curious what you guys kind of thought, like, where the hell did this come from? Like, I understand that, you know, businesses are out there to make money, and there probably came a point where Microsoft was like, you know, we need to pull in more money or whatever. But I think this was just such a dumb way to do it. And I know a lot of people have been saying, yo, Microsoft, read the room. There's a pandemic going on right now and people are having a penny pinch as it is. Like, maybe doubling the price just because the game industry had their best year ever doesn't mean that, like, suddenly we have the bandwidth to double the price for Xbox Live, which especially doesn't look good when you've got a new console that's sitting on the shelf next to the PlayStation 5, which, you know, doesn't make you pay to play Fortnite or any of that stuff online. And for me, okay, so speaking for me, like, where this just made me like, whoa, where the hell did this come from? And what the hell are you doing? You know, I definitely had that moment of, you know, wanting to scream at somebody because, and I think the reason why, because there's other companies that do this on the regular and kind of get away with it, like Netflix. But Netflix does a dollar here, a dollar there every year, every other year.
Yeah.
They kind of slowly start to raise it up a little bit. And, you know, Netflix kind of takes its own shit for that whole thing too. But not nearly at the volume that we saw on social media for what Microsoft did. Anyway, part of why I just feel like, whoa, what the hell are you thinking, Microsoft? Is because I have fully anticipated for a long time that Microsoft would actually go the other way and just get rid of Gold. It doesn't really make sense in this day and age. It doesn't. Like, paying to play the games online in the first place doesn't make a lot of sense. And y'all...
Well, it does because people have come to expect to pay for it.
Well, I in that regard, yes. But at the same time, A, it would give them such leverage against Sony to get rid of it. And B, when it comes to, and I understand, and people are going to come at me talking about the technical reasons and the servers and that it is a different pay structure and so forth. The thing is, the truth doesn't matter next to somebody's perception. And that's a very hard pill for people to swallow. I understand. But that is the way the consumer base works.
Well,
your perception is everything.
Platform, like, their same platform. You have these Xbox games that are on PC on the Microsoft Store, don't have to have Live Gold for
ding,
those to
ding,
play
ding,
online.
Ding. That is the point I was trying to get to. You are sitting side by side on Windows where you don't have to pay to play games online. And the concept of paying online on your PC is like, Why would I ever do that? Or Mac or whatever platform you're on. The concept of having to pay to play online on those, it's not even a thought. And if Microsoft were to try to introduce it, people would hack their way around it like that. It would. It's not anything they can do. So that's why I'm kind of stunned, because I feel like Microsoft should have been going the other way. So to see them doubling down, like, and I think what really frustrated me about that is I've been sitting here on this show, as with many of you, and on many of your shows and streams and podcasts and blogs and tweets and so forth, many of you have been sitting there going, Microsoft is a different company now. Microsoft is not the company it was under Don Mattrick. Microsoft has been going such a stronger direction under Phil Spencer. And I still believe all of that to be true. But then this happens. And it's like, there she is, the old Mimi. You know, you're that girl I thought you were. That's the feeling we had when it came to Microsoft suddenly like doubling the price. It was like, oh my God, you have been on such a great, like, four steps forward, 10 million back to double the price. It was ridiculous. Now, okay, unclench, y'all, exhale, because Microsoft quickly reversed course. And that is the important punchline to this whole thing, you know. And Phil Spencer actually replied to one of the guys from Gamertag Radio, which I thought was interesting, kind of apologizing for the whole situation happening in the first place. And it's one of those weird things, but it's like, well, didn't you have to sign off on this, dude? Like, how did this happen? Did something get like completely out of control and not get the authorizations it was supposed to have? Like, I don't know. So at the end of the day, Microsoft does end up going forward, but they showed their ass in the process. And that's kind of the problem for some people right now. And I think we'll all get past it. At least I know I will. Like, I'm already like, okay, well, the end result, we got something that we really should have had a long time ago. Yeah. And that is that Fortnite and all this stuff should be free on Microsoft, especially when you've got a new console you've got on the shelf next to PlayStation 5, where Sony can say, not on our thing, you know, or whatever. I'm not sure I understand the concept of push people to Game Pass by doubling the price of Xbox Live to get it closer to the price of Game Pass. Game Pass is a great deal and can be spoken of on its own strengths, but it also has me worried. How long is Game Pass going to stay that price? And I think that is the whole part of the ass showing that Microsoft did this week that has me a little bit concerned. You are about to raise the price of Xbox Live. All right, okay, how long until Game Pass's price is going to double? I hope that's not the direction they're thinking of going in. I understand the price will go up eventually.
I don't think they should double it, but I could see them raising it, but I don't know. We'll see.
Going to the chat for some of our comments there. So SSGO100 Matt says, now the cat's out of the bag. They're going to raise the price at the next appropriate time. They can't totally walk this back. ActDeft says, the other thing is that we shouldn't thank Microsoft for reversing this. They shouldn't have even come out with this in the first place. Yeah, it is one of those things. I don't know if thanking Microsoft is the right word, but it's one of those like, I'm glad you came to your senses. Now go to your room. You know, that's kind of where I feel I'm at with Microsoft this week. Zen Monkey says, I'm shocked Microsoft didn't use the old my little brother logged on to my account excuse. I've heard that so many times on Xbox Live whenever someone messed up in a game. SG100 Matt says, when that must-have game is a Game Pass exclusive and they'll sneak in that, oh, by the ways, we're raising the price. She-Hulk says the price will go up when all the companies they bought release great games. Well, you know, with Halo, you know, a big one that's scheduled to come at the end of the year. Again, I could see that the price of Game Pass is going to go up a little bit. And I think that's the reality we should prepare ourselves for. You know, if this shows us anything, we should probably like mentally prepare ourselves. Game Pass is not going to be the price that it's at forever. Shit, PC already doubled, didn't it? But let's be real, $5 a month on PC, that was kind of a steal. Like, it was really underpriced on PC. So I think it's going to be a matter of time before it creeps up. But I don't understand the whole raise the price of gold to move more people onto Game Pass argument.
Yeah, I think it maybe the only way I could see that they could possibly have, like, their thought process could have been maybe that we're seeing really high server usage, and so our server costs are going up, and therefore we have to offset it by raising the price. But I think that's more of like a temporary thing. I don't think that's going to stay that way forever. And I don't even know if that's necessarily a true fact either. Yeah, we have a lot more people playing games, but like, I don't know. I don't think that's it's night and day.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how they'll justify it. Or they could be just like the cable company and just raise your, you know, rates by $8 a month for no reason whatsoever. And just like, well, whatever. You know, so it's hard to say.
Yeah. It is. So it's kind of one of those, we've all got our eye on you now, Microsoft. But I am glad they at least have leveled the playing field when it comes to the free games, because, again, that was something that never really made sense. And when you're trying to sit here going, no, everyone, Microsoft is a great platform now. Like, it's not what you guys think it is or what you remember from when Xbox was first out. It's not all shooty bang bang games and all this stuff. It's like Microsoft's actually a great platform. You know, again, this happens and that's kind of crappy, but at least now people can't swing the whole, yeah, but you got to pay to play Fortnite on it, which doesn't make any sense. You don't have to pay to play it anywhere else. At least that is now out of the equation, or at least will be in the next, you know, couple months. But we know that's on the radar.
Well, that's also interesting too, because like if you're trying to bring people to your platform, like if I'm buying, you know, if I'm looking to buy a console for my kids or something, it's like I know that they play Fortnite. Okay, they don't really play Fortnite, but they play Roblox a lot, which is a free-to-play game. You know, it's like, well, I'm going to have to pay, you know, $15 a person, you know, or $10 a person a month or whatever for Xbox Live Gold, or I can just get a PC, or they can play on their tablets. Like, I don't know. It's just, Microsoft does a good job at selling PCs. You know, it's like, are you trying to dissuade people from buying your consoles? Because like, you're releasing your games on PC. It's cheaper to play it online on PC. Like, I don't understand, you know, why they do that. It's like, you know, I'm getting a better experience on PC. Why would I buy your console then?
Tiger Claw in chat says, do you think the reason why they try to raise the cost was because the prices to keep those servers went up? Maybe, you know, we don't really have insight as to the real reason why Microsoft was wanting to up the price outside of to make more money, because they didn't really try to justify it. And I mean, they didn't say that in their announcement post. You know, the price of maintaining servers has gone up. But I think we all know in the back of our mind, if the price of maintaining servers has gone up, which sure, it probably has gone up a little bit from year to year, especially in the past, you know, 10 years or whenever the last time they raised the price was, it didn't double. So I think that's why, like, I think honestly, if Microsoft had come out and said, we're increasing the price by $1 a month, I don't think you would have seen nearly this type of thing.
And it's also harder to make that argument too, when they just spent billions of dollars acquiring a bunch of different game companies. So it's like, yeah, I get it. There's, you know, the server costs and, you know, acquisition money is a little bit, it's different,
yeah,
things.
It's a little,
it's a hard argument to make that you're hurting for money when it's like, dude, you've got a bunch of money to buy all these game companies. Maybe buy one less game developer and then you could offset the cost of your servers for a little bit. But like, I don't know.
That particular argument is a little apples and oranges to me. But I also, you know, I have to go back to what I said before, is that it really doesn't matter what the facts are. It matters what the perception is. And I completely understand how the optics of that doesn't look great. So I get it. But I do think it's a little bit, you have money in this bucket and you have money in that bucket. And it's a little, the money's kind of used for different things. But I get it. The optics aren't good. You're right. Let's see. Bobby in chat with a few things. They care about the Xbox ecosystem, not necessarily the Xbox consoles. And the answer to your question is, if you're willing to spend the money for a PC that gets a better experience than an Xbox, then they still want to cater to you because you're still in the Xbox ecosystem. Microsoft has basically left the console war. They're now in a platform war, and that doesn't necessarily mean Xbox consoles. And I think that is also you know, something to keep in mind is that Microsoft is way more concerned with how many Game Pass subscriptions they're selling right now than how many Xbox consoles they're selling. Not that I think they're hurting in that space, because we still see that Xbox consoles are being scalped and they're selling out the minute they go up on different websites. I don't think Microsoft's really having a problem in that regard, but I think also supply is severely limited, so it's still hard to kind of gauge where that's really at. And also, like, you know, again, speaking for myself, I have a PC and I have an Xbox, and I will tell you, because the Xbox is a dedicated games platform, the games look and run better on my Xbox. I can't do as much with them. You know, I can't multitask the same way. I can't play a game on monitor A and have the news up on monitor B or some of that stuff. But even, I don't know, Microsoft does allow you to do some, I think there is some type of like screen and screen type of stuff and all this stuff. I just don't really play with that feature. But as far as like running the games, it does it very, very well, you know? So,
Yeah, not with Minecraft Bedrock, unfortunately. You click out of that screen, it disconnects you from the server.
Oh, that's weird.
It's like, why?
That's weird. A little silly. Oh. Jamie, I'm going to call on you. Just you've been quiet, but I know your horse is not as invested in Microsoft's race. But, you know, kind of listening to this whole thing and knowing that Microsoft, you know, does have to make money at the end of the day, what do you kind of think? Like, was this? Do you think they handled this in a weird way, or where's your head at with this? You're muted, just so you know, on the Discord end. And
fuck.
No worries.
Anyway.
Let's try again. What's your thought?
Honestly enough, I think, yeah, that they were right to admit that they made a big boo-boo. I mean, they flat out said, we messed up. I mean, that's verbatim. So, they shouldn't have raised it in the first place, but at the very least, they've gone and backed it back down, and they're following suit with the industry now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if they hadn't done that, then it would have been a bigger blow to their business mm-hmm. than making an extra $60 per person would have helped them. I mean,
yeah. And that is a good point. You know, even though I still kind of side with what ActDef said, where it's like, we don't necessarily have to full out, like, forgive them for the whole thing. I think you do make a very good point that certainly not every game company or every company in general would come out and say, oops, we messed up. And within a day, that is pretty fast. I mean, most companies yeah. that do end up saying, oops, we put our foot in our mouth, tee-hee, it takes them a week to do it. You know, think about the Blizzard and that whole situation when they banned that guy from the tournament who said free Hong Kong. You know, they still haven't really fully PR recovered from that. And a big part of that is that they waited so fucking long to do the bare minimum in that whole mm-hmm. situation, you know? And so I will give credit, and I think you're right to call that out, that Microsoft, at least, you know what? They did it within a day. That yeah. was an angry phone call happening from yeah. Phil Spencer or somebody at that level saying, WTF, knock it off.
Yeah, I think that it might have been like maybe just some, you know, I'd say just, you know, financial person.
Mm-hmm.
Who only saw like general operating costs and thought, oh, well, we can do this if we raise live by this, you know, all, you know, we're doing all of this with it. And then you have to look at the big picture. It has you. Yeah, their bottom line, making money. Right.
Right.
But they need to understand what it is, or I'd say who it is that gives them their money. And if you don't make the users of your product happy in a way that's going to also be cost effective and profitable, you are going to lose it all.
Yep.
You know, if they had put it to 120 and kept half of their user base, guess what? They'd be making the same amount of money.
Yeah, it's very interesting, this whole thing. And it does, I think now the only, you know, I think the thing that Phil Spencer is going to really be irritated about is that he's going to be asked about this for the next 3 months. Why did that
Probably.
Happen? How did this happen? Why did you decide to reverse? Like, Phil, and that is not the discussion Microsoft wanted to have for the next 3 months. They want to talk mm-hmm. about what games are coming out and all these things. And now I guarantee you, every interview Phil Spencer does for the next 3 months, people are going to ask, what happened with that price doubling thing? Like, why did you guys do that? How did that happen? Like, so to, you know, an ActDev's credit here, who says, you know, I'm glad that Microsoft reversed it, but it shouldn't happen in the first place. That is the price that will ultimately be paid here, is that the narrative now around Microsoft is, what are they doing over there at Microsoft? What are they plotting? What are they planning? And it's not going to be about the new Halo and the conversation that Microsoft wants to be having.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. All right. Anyway, I guess the last thing I could say about this whole thing of Microsoft is, we were rooting for you. All right. Let's move on. That's my third Drag Race reference I've snuck in, by the way, this whole episode. Let's move on and talk about how was your gaming week and the types of games that we've been playing this week. Dark Soccer, we'll start with you. How was your gaming week? Have you been playing Microsoft games or other stuff?
Animal Crossing.
Oh, of course.
And getting a few things ready. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'll just go ahead and say I have a procedure coming up this week, so I'm actually going to be playing... trying to go back in and play just some things that have been on my backlog while I'm recovering. And I did buy a game for Dan for $5. I got Outrun
$5?
Europa. Sorry, Siri's talking to me. I got Outrun Europa for Game Gear.
Oh, nice.
Just because we watched a thing about Outrun and I was like, yeah, I'll get it. So why not? So, and then I got like the... Nintendo DS, like a Sega Classics pack that has like Puyo Puyo and Fantasy Zone and all of that on it. So I might actually break out my my 3DS. But really the big reason I have that is so that I can play their version of Space Harrier.
Mm-hmm.
Because their version of Space Harrier has the tilt control. Like the simulates like you're in like the tilting cockpit.
Neat.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool, and it was fairly cheap. I did actually get something that's not a game, Rob, but I think you might want to take it from me.
Okay.
I got the Golden Girls tarot deck.
A tarot deck? What?
I did.
Now, I know the Golden Girls have been licensed to all sorts of strange things, but a tarot deck? Like, I've seen Monopoly and Clue. Okay, interesting.
I have a Golden Girls tarot deck, and... if you want to steal it from me, I would have no problem with you gaining custody of it. But I have to try the deck out because it just seems absolutely hilarious. The moment I saw it was like $14, so it wasn't that expensive. But I thought it was pretty funny.
Zen Monkey is wondering, is Rose the Fool card?
I haven't even opened it.
No, it'd have to be Stanley. It'd have to. All right. Anyway. All right, Loki, you're having some Discord problems. If you guys are hearing Discord noises on the podcast, it's Loki connecting, reconnecting. Are you with us?
Sorry. I'm still here, yeah.
Oh, you're just not on video?
Yeah, the video thing's being ridiculous here. So anyways, so this week I did play a few more things. We picked up Super Smash Bros. Ultimate because my son was having like his seventh birthday party. Not party, but I had like... a couple friends over. And so we played a bit of that because we had to unlock all the characters. I purchased both the fighter passes and stuff, so that's fun. Mainly everybody's maining Steve, and that's been a lot of fun playing as that. What else? I actually, ironically, even though it's being discontinued, I played a bit of Minecraft Earth. So that was kind of interesting, being that I haven't played it in a long time. So it was interesting to see all the new things that they add to it, but the game's being discontinued, which is too bad. And then, well, really, with all the stuff that they have in the game that they don't have in the vanilla Minecraft, I really wish they'd add all the mobs and stuff in there, because there's a lot of things that are exclusive to Minecraft Earth that aren't in the main vanilla game. Orna, and then aside from that, a little bit of Minecraft. And most of this week was just watching Twitch streams for Epic SMP while I was coding and doing artwork for my game. So that's pretty much where most of my focus has been.
Nice. Going to chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork, talking about the Super Smash Brothers event that your son had. Bobby says, I figured it was just Minecraft fighting, which, you know, is funny because I seem to remember Bobby being one of the people that was kind of saying this when Steve was announced for Minecraft, was that it's not Steve or Steve being in Minecraft. Sorry, guys. Steve being in Smash Brothers. Hello. That when that announcement came out, a lot of the Smash Brothers fandom was kind of like, ew, why? And there were folks like Bobby and other folks too that were saying, Steve being in Smash Brothers isn't really for you. It's for a different audience that's going to appreciate it and bring more people into playing Smash Brothers. And hence, here's, you know, case in point and the evidence brought forth before the court, what you're talking about with the kids, how all the 7-year-olds, they're all playing Minecraft Steve and playing Steve Fighter.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so and he's a fun character to play as. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really take it too seriously, so whatever. But it's pretty fun. So I like him. The other character I've been playing a lot, because I still don't, like, I have trouble, like, controlling my characters because I don't play Smash at all. I don't even really know what the controls are to Smash. I just kind of, you know, just playing it based on what I remember from years ago with Smash Brothers Wii and stuff like that. I was playing a lot of Terry Bogard, which is kind of fun. And since we have all, like, the DLC characters unlocked now, we're still at, like, 60-some characters to unlock. I mean, it's going to be a while before we get everybody, which is kind of, it's good and bad at the same time. Like, it's good because it gives you some reason to play the game, but it's bad. It's like, well, I wanted to play as Mega Man or play as, I don't know, one of the other characters. It can't do that because I have to play through hundreds of games to unlock everybody. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm surprised they don't just have something in the store that just unlocks
like
every character
code or something.
Yeah, you know, at this point, but or if you've bought any of the DLC, you know, if they want to charge for it or whatever, at least kind of just make it like, oh, if you bought any of the DLC and it just unlocks all the characters. I get that. So
yeah.
All right, nice advertisement there. All right. Okay. Oh, you're back.
It's not advertising. That's what it looks like when it loads the screen, okay?
No, I get it. I get it.
It's not advertising.
For the podcast, folks, I'm teasing Loki's camera was slowly coming back on, but it shows the website for the company of the software he's using, and then, like, it takes a second, and then Loki suddenly appears. So, hey, you guys know how Loki's getting his face here to Discord.
Yes, it's XSplit VCam.
Hey, did they pay you for that? Did they pay you for that? No free ads.
They did not pay me for that, but I have no green screen. So, it works like a green screen without a green screen.
All right. Well, even Skype does that now. Come on. All right. Anyway.
Well, I had to pay for this one, so, you know, whatever.
All right, moving on to my gaming week. So I've still been playing a lot of Final Fantasy XIV. There was a big crafting event that was going on in the game, what's called the Ishgard Rankings, where the top 100 people in every craft, it's like a competition where you're crafting certain items. And I could not make the hardest item. I had to make the second to hardest item, and I made a lot of them. I made 400 of those throughout the week. But you know what, y'all? I ended up in the ranks. I'm number 50. I think it was 57 or 58. I ended up number 58 on my server for Carpentry. So I got my stupid title. I got in the rankings. I'm good. I'm happy. So that was my big Final Fantasy 14 accomplishment outside of, you know, continuing more, you know, roulettes and things of that nature. Here's the big news. And this happened right after last week's show, actually. Last week's show finished a little early, if I remember right. I think it was done about an hour earlier than usual, just because, you know, January, we tend to have less news. And I went right into Pokemon, and I was talking to Shane a little bit, and I was like, hey, I need to touch trade a few things, because I'm really close to finishing my decks, but there's a couple things like Flapple and stuff, they're just going to be way too hard for me to get in Shield. So, like, can I touch trade you a couple things, and I'll be done? And he said, of course. So we got on, we touch traded a few things, I went through and I evolved a few more things I needed to, and I caught them all. I sure did. Guess what? I caught them all. My decks in Pokemon Shield, done. 400 out of 400. I got my certificate. I got my shiny charm. I was the very best that no one ever was, even if I had to temporarily steal someone else's Pokemon to get it done. It doesn't matter. I still did it. So, Jamie, Jamie's giving me three claps. Phoenix in chat says that's a big dex. Yeah, the base dex in Shield.
You keep the dex in your pants there.
The base dex in Shield is 400, and so I finished that. Well, and then ActDef says, so what are you shiny hunting first? Okay, so here's the gag. Number one, I didn't realize the shiny charm guy, if you talk to him earlier, like after you beat the game, he gives you a charm that makes catching easier. So that would have made this whole process a lot easier. I mean, quick balls are pretty efficient, but still, that made me very mad when I was like, oh, now a critical catch chance charm? Really? Now a warning? Anyway, so there was that. And then I got the shiny charm. But since I was on Discord with Shane, you know his first thing was, okay, you're going to get the DLC? We're going to go to Dynamax. So that was the first thing I did was I went on a Dynamax raid with Shane in the Tundra. He was like, yeah, just go to the Tundra DLC. It's better. So I went to that, and he led me through it, and I got a Tapu something, some fairy legendary from one of the recent games at the end of our Dynamax thing. So he did say he was running a test because he said everybody is supposed to get Suicune on their first run, but if you go with somebody else, he was curious if I'd still be locked into Suicune or get somebody else. And it turns out I got somebody else. I got Tapu. I'm sorry, I forget. It's two names. I forgot the second name. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, so are you glad there's no national decks so you don't actually have to catch them all? Funny you mention that, because yes, there is a national dex on the Switch. What? It's Pokemon Home. Pokemon Home is a national dex on Switch. So where I'm kind of the understanding, I'm not really going to catch them all and fill out my entire dex on Switch, because that's going to need games that I just don't really have access to anymore or what have you. I still have been combining what was in my old Pokemon Bank, Pokemon Go, and Pokemon Shield, and dumping all that into Home. And I'm up to 550 decks in Pokemon Home. And I think once I do the DLC, which will be my next thing for Shield, that'll certainly be a few more mon with that. And then who knows? I may be motivated to go back and play like Moon or Sun or one of the other games and really try to work on my decks that way. And I might get a lot closer than some of y'all think. Quarantine makes people do crazy things. That is it. ActDef gave me all the names. It was Tapu Fini, I think, is it. I think it was Tapu Fini, sounds right. Let's see. SG100 Matt in chat says, Shane is Rob's gaming accountant. His hero's power just convinces him to buy whatever he says. Yes and no. I mean, think about this, though, guys. How long have Shane and I been friends? We've been friends a very long time. Think back to when Shane's first appearance on this show was. I'll give you a hint. It was before many of you were listening. It was back when Loki and I were living together in the Live 365 days. He was like 18 or 19 then. Like, he was young, but we were like 24 or 25. So it was that was in the first or second year of OLR. He probably was probably the first time he guested on the show. And the reason why I say that is that was over 15 years ago. I just now have finished the decks in a Pokemon game thanks to a global pandemic that has forced my attention to stay focused on one or two games for a long period of time. So if there were powers or whatever, I think it would have happened 15 years ago. I would have probably finished the decks in Black or White, his favorite game. That never happened. So there is that. All right. In fact, actually, Dark Sakura, he name-checked us. I don't mean to make this the Shane show. Well, he's not here in chat right now for his ego to get bigger. But you and I were name-checked in a tweet, and I had forgot about this. We went down to Disneyland, and I think it was for a birthday trip of yours, I want to say. And on our way down there, do you remember we had to go to a Walmart that was in like Azusa or some shit? I don't remember. I think it was because Arcade Infinity was over in that direction. And we went to a Walmart over there. And that was so he could buy a Pokemon game. I forgot about that until he name checked us in a tweet earlier this week where he was like, I went to a Walmart with Jamie and Rob and picked up whatever game it was that released that week. So I thought that was kind of, I was like, oh, I forgot that was a Pokemon thing. I remember having to make the detour to the Walmart, and that was Shane's accountant hero's power thing was, yes, if we're going to go to Arcade Infinity, why don't you go just a little bit longer and go to the Walmart so I can get something?
It's Arcade Infinity.
Was that?
I miss Arcade Infinity.
I do too. That was a fun trip. Yeah, that was back when we could do that and Disneyland in one trip. It was fun. So, all right. Anyway, also in my
game. Now it's like you're halfway through Disney and you have to go take a nap.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's see. Then what else during my gaming week? So there was that. And then I played Donut. Is it Donut Country or Donut County?
Country. Or
I can't remember. Point.
I don't remember. Is it Donut County, I think.
Okay, Donut County. They just added that to Game Pass, and even though I'd played that on, I think, Steam previously, I played it on Xbox a little bit. That's the game that's kind of like the reverse Katamari, where instead of rolling things up into a ball, you have the hole swallow them into the earth, and it's kind of like a silly story that goes with it. Have you played this, Dark Soccer? This is totally your kind of game.
I have it. I have it for Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it for a hot minute and then got busy with other things. So I really need to just go back and dedicate some more time to it. But and I'll be perfectly honest, I probably should just get it on my iPad now because I haven't touched my MacBook since I got my iPad, except when I had to run two computers at the same time.
Yeah, whatever works. Like, get it. Yeah, I keep forgetting it's also a phone. Well, you know, phone, tablets, like, you know, that whole ecosystem. It's on. It's there,
too.
Should
see if it's actually Apple Arcade.
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised, but especially if it's on Game Pass. But anyway, we're checking out. So yeah, I played a little bit of that as well, and a few other things here and there. Tetris Effect a little more, and just, you know, chilling on Xbox with some of that. I just downloaded what did I just download? There's something else I'm getting to this week because I just downloaded it, and now of course the name escapes me. Oh well, stay tuned for next week because I haven't played it yet. I just downloaded it, waiting to play it for next week. All right, let's move on with the show. We have lots of news to get into tonight. Things are starting to pick back up now that it's January. All right, let's get to it. Loki, we'll start with you. How was your gaming week? Jamie, your camera is still on, just so you know. I think you meant to turn it off. All right, well, oops. She thought she turned it off. She didn't. She's taking an AFK. Anyway, Loki, why don't you start us off with the news?
Yeah, so Cyberpunk finally got that major patch that they had announced in their apology video. So it did come out on all platforms. It's about a 17 gig download, and it fixed different issues, including some optimizations, buggy quests, visual hiccups, general stability. However, like most patches that come out nowadays, it also broke some stuff. So some of those are actually game-breaking bugs that caused different quests not to work. There is like one quest, for example, where a certain NPC won't call you, or there's another quest where you can't pull your gun out. Lots of issues still being worked on. Hopefully this stuff's going to be addressed in another patch, but right now they are laying the groundwork for upcoming patches. The next big one is due in February.
What did you think of that whole roadmap that they put out early? I mean, you're the only one
that
of the trio that's
mean
really
anything
played.
To me.
The
like
game.
I don't know. I haven't played this in a while. I haven't gotten around to playing it again. But like I'll go back and play it some more. But I don't know. None of that stuff means anything to me because I don't know like exactly like what's being fixed and stuff. So we'll see. I have to see what kind of performance issues are going to be cleared up. There's like just some stuff that's not even performance based, like the, you know, cop AI or I don't know, like some of the weird visual glitches and stuff. If they could fix some of that, would be nice. But yeah, mainly like the police AI would be something I would like to be have fixed. Maybe some of the vehicle physics and stuff. But other than that, it's, I don't know. It doesn't really dissuade me either way. I just don't have time to play it right now. I'm not making time to play it. We'll see if I ever get to finish it because, you know, like a lot of these games, if I, you know, don't play it for a long enough time, I'll just go back and play something else. Like I was, once again, like I said, mentioning that I watch a lot of Twitch this week. I saw people playing Skyrim. I saw people playing Minecraft on like specific servers. I'm like, man, I should go back and play some Skyrim.
Oh, that is all my husband's been doing for like 4 months is playing Skyrim. And he plays some mod. The game doesn't even look the same. Like it changes the base interface and font. And I'm like, what the fuck are you even playing? He's like, it's Skyrim. I'm like, oh, it is, but it's not. No, it isn't. So he,
yeah,
but
like,
that's,
I don't know.
My husband loves mods, loves them. That is why he games on PC. That is his bread and butter. So right. The games don't even look recognizable.
Yeah, I mean, and to like go into like another tangent here, like about, you know, streaming and stuff. Like I said, I've been watching this. It's a stream, basically a group of streamers and YouTube stars and stuff like that. They're playing a survival multiplayer realm, or not really a realm, but like a server for Java Minecraft. And it's got this mod in there called Create, which is pretty amazing. You can make like, you know, water wheels and stuff that actually spins, and like, you know, working elevators and like all sorts of create, like trains, not just like a, you know, a mine cart and riding around on a mine cart, but like an actual train and like all sorts of crazy stuff. But it's just a lot of them playing together, and I'm like, man, like I would really love to play with a lot of people that are actually going to be online and playing all the time. Mm-hmm. That would be a lot of fun. I really want to get into like something like that to stream or whatever. And even just like watching, you know, folks stream Skyrim, and not like necessarily with mods on or anything. It's just like vanilla Skyrim. Just like, okay, I'm just going to go through this game and, you know, interact with chat and stuff like that. So I definitely want to get into that once I'm done, you know, developing my game. But yeah, so enough of that tangent though, but yeah, Cyberpunk, no, hopefully I'll get back to it at some point.
I'm looking at some comments from chat. Questbuster says, the roadmap is more disappointing to me because instead of focusing on new things to do in the game with their DLC plans, the convo is all about fixes instead. And so, yeah, I think that's what's kind of been a very frustrating thing for a lot of people. Even if you didn't think Cyberpunk was broken in the first place, they've got to fix it for all the people it is broken for. And it's kind of preventing the game from getting the DLC and, you know, other types of expansions that you would come to expect from you know, this developer when they did this with, you know, Witcher 3 and all that, you know, all the DLC.
Well, the DLC is still coming up before they even make the, like, PlayStation 5 and, you know, Xbox Series X versions that were supposed to be coming out well before the DLC. So stuff's still gotten, you know, mixed. The order's kind of mixed up right now on it, but I think that stuff's, you're going to see that sooner than some of these other enhancements.
Bobby Blackwell's talking about how it's kind of hard to jump back into a game after you haven't played it for a while, saying, if I don't play something for a long time, my problem is that I forget how to play and I forget my progression path for my characters. I know I left off of Cyberpunk literally mid-quest. Yes, big same. And Bobby says, Yakuza Like a Dragon has that story so far on their load screen, but the game loads so fast on the Series X, you can't read it. Womp womp. Dragon Quest XI does the same thing, but there's a big, big difference that makes it better. You have to actually press the A button. Once loading is done, it says press A to continue. And that, so you have time to read it. Ta-da! But the tips still go by too fast. So no tips for you, but at least you don't get lost in the story on Dragon Quest XI. and then I say, Pokemon. I left Pokemon for a long time, Shield. You know, I bought the game when it first came out, and I didn't finish my decks until now. But the nice thing is, the bottom of the screen always reminds you where you're at in the story. Or actually, I'd already beaten it at that point. But you still, the Pokedex will always show you, you know, here's some Mon you don't have yet. Now that I'm in the DLC, it also will always on the pause screen say, you should go here and talk to so-and-so or whatever it is you need to do. So. Anyway,
I think I just finished the third gym, and now I'm just wandering around in
on
that
Shield?
Big. I got Sword.
Oh, it's same gym, but yeah.
But I think it's like this one scene where they're like, "Oh, go out and play for a little bit," and I'm like, "Okay."
Interesting.
Sure, I'll play.
Trying to.
It's like in that big open field area. Right before the big walled city.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember why they have you do that, if they're trying to get you to catch a certain Mon or force something to happen. I'd have to go back and remember in the story. It's probably you have to trigger some type of event, just like catching a certain Pokemon or something. But there shouldn't be a lot blocking you from going to the
fortune. I know what I'm doing. I'm leveling my opposite types.
Okay. Yeah.
For the next gym.
The wild area is a great change, but it does play into that thing that's always stopped me from beating Pokemon games that I really had to kind of break in my mind, is that
the grind.
I'm always distracted by, ooh, I got to catch them all while I'm here. I got to get everything out in this area. And you really have to leave that mindset behind, especially because you could stay in that wild area forever and catch almost everything. Yeah, you got to be careful.
Well, And honestly, the grindy part, though, I mean, is why I stopped caring.
Yeah, I understand. So
the thing is that I really thought this would be the game to get me back into Pokemon, and no.
Well, you never know if you can get over that little hump, you might make it the rest of the way.
It's really the collection thing of I kind of am just not into it. I'd rather play, I mean, a conventional RPG, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on and let's talk about stocks and investing, which is something, honestly, if I understood this stuff, I would be a lot richer than I am. And I'd probably be on a cruise, right? Well, not right now, but I would be traveling the world. Well, not right now. But I would be holed up in my mansion if I understood investing in stocks and all this stuff. I had to read this several times, and I'm not sure it makes sense. Here's what it is. So GameStop's stonks had some issues this week, and it was partially caused by Reddit, it sounds like. I'm going to just read this. I don't like to read things verbatim, but the problem is I have a hard time explaining this. So I'm going to read a paragraph here from this story on TheVerge.com, and I am going to read it a little bit verbatim, so I apologize to The Verge. You should go check out the story over there. Here's their paragraph. The hype generated by Reddit Wall Street Bets helped create what's known as a short squeeze on GameStop's stock. A short squeeze works like this. Some investors, known as shorts, essentially bet that a company's stock will fall. These investors borrow stock from other investors and sell it, with plans to buy it back when the prices fall and then return it to the original owner. I had to read that like four times for it to make sense. But essentially, you're banking on the fact that it's going to fail. So you're borrowing. You're like, say, hey, Jamie, can I borrow some turnips from you real quick? Okay, I'm going to borrow these turnips. Okay, I'll bring them back. And then you sell them while the turnips are high. And then later in the week, turnips are low again. So you buy them at the low price. And then I go back to Jamie and say, okay, thank you for letting me hold your turnips for a little bit. And so I made a profit basically by borrowing something and selling it when it was low. And I had to translate to Animal Crossing a little bit for it to make sense to me. Okay. Now, the problem...
I actually deal with that a little bit with my 401k.
Okay. Yeah. And you know what? And again, some of you are probably better vested in this stuff than I am. No pun intended. Than I am. Okay. So, all right. The problem with the shorting is that losses are theoretically infinite. If a stock begins an upward run... Some short sellers will abandon their short and buy shares at the higher price to return. This, in turn, makes the stock go higher, burning any other shorts who remain in the stock, some of whom may, in turn, choose to cover their own shorts. So, in other words, everybody gets nervous at the same time it's not going down. So, oh shit, I better just buy the turnips again while I'm only going to lose a little money because a little higher. And then, effectively, you're just driving the turnip price up for everybody else. So that's what happened. And honestly, I was sitting there going, how is that legal? How does Reddit not fuck it up for everything if this is the case? Like, wouldn't you just conspire to do certain things? But it turns out a lot of that kind of like conspiracy, it actually is illegal, you guys. That's what they call the Martha Stewart types of crimes. Okay. Why did Martha Stewart go to jail or have to wear a bracelet on her leg?
Insider trading.
Is insider trading
because she was a woman.
This is an insider trading.
Well, that too. No, it wasn't. It wasn't exactly the short situation. Yes, but it was stock market related stuff. Is essentially the real big leap I'm making here. All right. Anyway, and yes, because she was a woman, a powerful one at that. Let's see.
And what is it that the white guys in charge fear, in part? Powerful women.
Women. And other minorities.
Ooh, vaginas.
All right, anyway. What else was I going to say here? Oh.
Not saying that all women have vaginas, I'm just saying.
Yes, I understand. GameStop is the most shorted stock in the market, according to CNBC. 138% of the stocks are sold short. In other words, what that's saying to you is that most investors predict that GameStop stock is going to continue to go down.
Yes, it probably will, just based off of what we know about GameStop. So the GameStop, for example, they have a new person that's from Chewy. I think they helped launch Chewy.com or something like that. Uh-huh. They're looking to take them fully digital. And the guy that's in charge there, he wants to basically remove all of their physical storefronts. You know, the only thing that makes them actually unique right now, he wants to compete with Amazon and like Newegg and stuff like that with new game releases. Good luck to you. Not going to work out for you.
I'm also giggling at chat. DJ Rama S in chat says Martha Stewart went to jail because she's no snitch. All right. Do you ever check Martha Stewart's Instagram? Like, I really aspire to be her when I'm retired because she's that woman's in her 70s and she's posting like, here's my makeup selfie. Like, she's posting like she's a makeup influencer on YouTube, and I kind of live for it. Anyway, this isn't the Martha Stewart show, although maybe it ought to be. Moving on, I wanted to talk about So I was questioning, how is this legal, right? So let's talk about the Reddit post and how this whole turnip game began, okay? So a short seller research company called Citron Research predicted that the price would drop. So Redditors on Wall Street Bets, who went and were kind of like driving up interest in the stock, criticized Citron on the Reddit and continued to praise the stock on social media. This pissed off the Citron Research guy, saying it will no longer comment on the GameStop stock. I always want to say stonk, because of the angry mob who owns the stock. The research editor named Andrew Left put a note on Twitter saying the backlash had criminal activity and I am going to report you to the Securities and Exchange Commission, which included harassment of minor children and financial crimes. So basically, I want to speak to Tom Nook's manager. I'm taking you to the Supreme Court, is basically the note that he left on Twitter. You can go read it for yourself over at Citron Research on Twitter. But honestly, just stick to Animal Crossing turnips. It's safer. Anyway, Questbuster is apparently our Wall Street analyst here, because I certainly don't understand this shit. But Questbuster's trying to translate some stuff here, saying shorts are legal. Naked shorts, where you sell shares without actually having them, are not. Interesting. All right. Anyway, there's your stonk market lesson of the week. Again, if you want to learn more, buy and sell turnips in Animal Crossing, because there's a reason why they do. Because isn't turnip literally the same word as stock in Japanese? And that's how
it's similar.
Or similar. Okay.
It's a very similar one. I mean, which is why like Joan was Sal Joan,
mm-hmm.
as in Dow Jones. You know, they try to follow the same nicknaming thing. But yeah, stocks and I have to look up the word again. But hold on.
It's not that big a thing, but I knew it was like a similar or same word.
Kabushiki? Hold on. Let me double check it. Kabu, I think it is.
Okay.
Where the word came from.
Okay. So anyway, just interesting. So,
turnip is kabu.
Okay. Okay. It is interesting because a lot of us have predicted the GameStop stock is going to go down, down, down. But as Loki said, you know, and we know that Reggie Fils-Aimé was recently, you know, added to the advisory board and what have you. And now they have the Chewy guy coming in and, you know, trying to fix things as well. And, you know, GameStop is trying to put themselves on a different path. And so GameStop may not be the short sell that people have, you know, kind of made it out to be over the past, you know, few years. So anyway. All right, let's move on to our next story. Dark Sakura, you have a report on a big demo release this week, right?
Yeah, and it involves a woman of some stature. But they released the name for the lady from Resident Evil 8. I would say artistically vintage clad woman who has a thing for wearing white and really a really bold lip. I mean, red, it's, you know, groundbreaking. Anyway, so her name is Lady I'm going to mispronounce this, Dimitrescu. I guess it's supposed to be like Dimitri Escu, Dimitrescu. And it was actually her name. She's actually named in a PlayStation blog post. Basically Capcom gets it. But they showed that she reports to someone named Mother Miranda, who leads a cadre of vampires and is behind a lot of the shenanigans. But she basically, as a villain, she's kind of a little bit different, because she seems to have a different kind of menace to her. But the thing is that someone stopped and figured out pretty much how tall she is. As you know, it wasn't said anywhere, but leave it to, you know, curious people on the internet who like doing math. So basically, one particular writer named Ash Parrish, this actually came from an article that she wrote on Kotaku, took the basically guessed the age of the home, because apparently the castle Dimitrescu was traced back as far as the 15th century, talking about their winemaking. And so she went looking for 15th century French courtyard doors and found some from the Metropolitan Museum of Art's website. And so, doing math skills, so that door was 86 inches, and she and the lady stood about a head taller. The average head is about 8 to 9 inches, so she added another inch because of the general height, which puts her roughly to 96 inches tall, or 8 feet tall. That's tall.
That is very tall. That's not. And Zen Monkey in chat says, is this a video game or real people? It is a video game, but people are treating it like real people.
Right. It's just absolutely, I mean.
But monsters can be tall. Crazy. Yeah.
And for those of, and for our friends who are metric, that's 243 centimeters.
Thank you.
Or 2.5 meters, roughly.
I did not play
and
the demo.
Be thirsty on Twitter too, so you know.
Pardon me?
I said, and people be thirsty on Twitter.
Hell yeah.
All I've seen is just all sorts of nonsense regarding these.
Kill me, mommy.
Video clips. Exactly. It's just like
she's.
It's like, dude.
Absolutely statuesque, quite literally, because she looks like marble. She looks like she's made of stone.
What is
just
it that...
with her tone?
What is it that people tweet to Katya and Trixie all the time? Like, fuck me with a rake, mom, or things like that. Like, people on Twitter be crazy.
Mm. Oh, all those silly Barbaras.
All right. Bobby is saying the top comment on Kotaku on the article, which I find interesting. I figured she's 8 feet tall because the moment I saw her, I felt that she's based on the Japanese urban legend Hachisakusama. Which is literally 8 feet tall, who is about a tall woman dressed in a white dress with a white brimmed hat who stalks and abducts children to kill. So an interesting.
And that's what
there.
The lady's doing is she's abducting children.
Yeah. So maybe.
So actually that makes a lot of sense to me. I don't even know why I didn't put that together.
Well, that's the I think that's the first time in the history of the internet the comments section has been helpful. That's a news report all in itself. Video game story comment section proves
that's
to
the,
be helpful.
That's the biggest news this
that's
week.
That's the biggest news of the week. We've been doing this fucking show 18 years. That's never happened.
Yeah, this is it. And I don't even know why I didn't put it together, because I was actually just reading about yokai and vengeful ghosts. And this one, I mean, that same story has played into other video games in the past. And movies. There's been other movies, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Bobby Blackwolf says, I mean, the VOG network comment section is always useful. Of course. Yes. Thank you for the cheap plug. Of course. Of course. Our own comment section.
We're talking
section
about regular.
We're talking about normal websites, popular websites.
Your average. Yeah.
Yeah. Average gamer website. All right. Anyhow, let's move on. Next story. But thank you, Dark Sakura. I wish I could have played the demo, but it's only on PlayStation 5. Alan said he watched a playthrough, and I've heard things, but I'm also not super big on scary games. But I guess this one isn't gory. I guess the preview wasn't very gory, so that's good.
We've had the debate on getting a PS5 just off and on, but But then again, we also want a hot tub and a massage chair. So
both worthy investments. All right. Moving on. Loki, what's next?
Yeah, so apparently Opera has purchased Yo-Yo Games, the company behind the popular game-making software GameMaker. And that was for $10 million. They're apparently going to use Yo-Yo Games' knowledge in game development to hopefully bolster Opera GX and branching out into a broader ecosystem, making more accessible to novice users, developing the world's leading 2D game engine by commercial studios. So kind of a little bit of helping out Opera, a little bit of helping out Yo-Yo Games. Cool. Curious to see what's going to happen with that. Maybe we'll have some of these GameMaker engine games running natively in Opera GX. I mean, obviously HTML5, I guess you could do that already, but maybe some sort of platform for that storefront, who knows?
Yeah, you know, Opera isn't, I mean, Jason referenced it in the intro a little bit, but it's not always been a browser that's caught on with the mainstream. So is this some type of bid to maybe position it as like kind of like a gaming type of browser, or, you know, something that makes more people kind of interested in Opera because it would natively have more games?
I use Opera.
Do you?
It's my a second browser on my PC. I use Chrome and Opera. And I use Opera specifically for like all the stuff that I do as a sister with all my nonprofit stuff, just for some of its encryption. Although I don't like it at all on my Mac. On my Mac, I really only use Safari, but Opera is a great browser.
Interesting.
Yeah.
ActF's saying the Opera GX was actually released back in 2019. All right. Well, speaking of games and getting things improved in games, but not necessarily the official way, let's talk about Skyrim and a new mod that is allowing it to run at 60 frames a second on a PlayStation 5. Because you may not have known, even though it's running on a PlayStation 5, it's still got a frame rate lock to it, which seems silly. But now, thanks to modding, it's Skyrim at 60 frames a second. That is exactly, by the way, what the mod is called, Skyrim at 60 FPS. Because you might remember that the console versions of Skyrim, the definitive edition, do have some type of mod support, but they're like official mods through Bethesda and all this. But this mod will unlock the game's frame rate on PlayStation 5 to boost it from 30. And so it will, you know, make things run very smooth, although it may cause some more bugs to appear. It was made using the creation kit, Bethesda's kit, but using a small trick that is in the software that will allow initialization config or .ini files to work on the PlayStation 4 platform, very similar to Xbox or PC. So that is what is allowing it to run. And what's interesting is that even if you disable it, it will still work, allowing you to get the trophies. That's interesting because, yeah, usually when you're running mods, you can't get achievements or trophies because, you know, otherwise they'd make a mod that's just like pop all the trophies. Ding. So usually they disable it. But this one, actually, even if you have it and you disable it, it will still work. It's kind of interesting because of what it's doing. So check that out if you are curious and don't mind maybe some additional bugs caused by the game not officially supporting that sort of thing. Let's move on. Dark Sakura.
Well, in other news, there is some absorption going on. If we're going to move to another game, we're going to talk about Blizzard for a bit. Mm-hmm. They are working on doing more consolidation over Blizzard Entertainment. Activision is, sorry. By moving in a 200-person design studio. So they're absorbing Vicarious Visions, which has been a subsidiary of Activision since 2005. They worked on Skylanders, Crash Bandicoot, Tony Hawk, and they are being turned solely toward Blizzard's franchises. That includes Diablo. And that their former studio head, Jennifer O'Neill, will basically be taking over Blizzard's leadership team. So I don't know what this means for the Blizzard content, you know, if it's going to mean a little bit more maybe about that remake of Diablo 2.
That's what the rumors are saying right now, but, you know, rumor.
Yeah. And so basically, though, that they have nothing official to say about that right now. But that really is the big thing that they're thinking is going on with that. And also, you know, they're also taking a step from the Warcraft 3 Reforged because of how glitchy and missing features and the really poor Metacritic score. It was actually the lowest score for a Blizzard game. So I'm wondering if that might have something to do with it as well.
Yeah, you know, we haven't really heard stories about Blizzard expanding into new studios in a very, very, or, you know, in expanding their name into other studios in a very, very long time. The last time I can think of is what, like Blizzard North, which didn't really stick around a long time. But even that, like, that was back in the 90s. Like, it was a long time ago. Maybe the early aughts was when it finally went. But that was, because what did they do? Did they do the StarCraft? Were they StarCraft Ghost? There was something they were working on, like a big thing that got canceled. But regardless,
I don't recall.
Regardless, Blizzard hasn't done much with their game making outside of Irvine. I mean, yes, I know there was like Paris, but that was a lot of like, I think it was a lot of customer service and marketing for the Europe audience and so forth. Like a lot of the game making is really right there in Irvine. So we haven't heard like of them really expanding out of there. At least correct me in chat if I'm wrong, but I don't think they've been making a lot not in that office for quite some time. So this is, you know, pretty big news for them. Vicarious Visions, you know, those Tony Hawk remakes they just did not that long ago were really well received, you know, for being the fact that they were Tony Hawk remakes, especially, you know, I know people love those games, but, you know, I don't think people had the bar set very high for the remakes, but it really did live up to it. So hearing that they could be on a Diablo 2 remake, seeing as, you know, the expectations would be very high for that, seeing as the Warcraft 3 remake did not land, I think Blizzard the way Blizzard hoped it would. It could be very interesting to see what that could mean for Blizzard's future. Because Blizzard...
We'll see.
Blizzard needs some good news.
They're going to do a Three Vikings MMO.
That would be rad. I'd be in for that.
Right?
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to believe rumors, which, you know, take it or leave it, Overwatch 2 doesn't appear to be coming anytime soon. Diablo 4, we don't know what's going on with that, but that Diablo phone game they sure killed a BlizzCon over still isn't out. So it just seems like Blizzard kind of needs a lot of good news and fast. So maybe this Vicarious Visions, them being on board, will help them get there. We'll see. All right.
Fingers and toes.
Yeah, fingers and toes. I'm rooting for Blizzard. You know, they make a lot of great games, and I want to see them continue to do that. I haven't agreed with all their decisions in the past couple of years, but I hope they get back there. I hope they find it. All right. ActDef says the rumor mill says that Overwatch 2 is coming 2022. That's a long wait, especially for a game that feels like it's really derivative of the first game. But maybe that is something they're trying to set out to change. And that's why it's going to take a little longer. I don't know. We'll see. I hope they get Diablo 4 out this year. But then at the same time, as much as I'm like, they need to get the game out this year, but they need to get it right. Right. They need to don't rush it. It's hard. I say get it out this year, but don't rush it. It sucks. But that's the reality of, you know, you got to get the games out to make money. So oof.
See how it goes.
All right. Questbusters pointing out Diablo Immortal, the phone game. It's in closed testing right now. There have been a few streamers that showed it off, and the early word is that it's fun. Well, that would be a great redemption arc for Blizzard. If that Diablo phone game kicks ass, that's good news. I don't see that as a negative at all. Good, good. Make all that bullshit they put up with that one BlizzCon and the don't you all have phones. Make that pay back in dividends. Make the next Pokemon Go. I'd love that for Blizzard. My expectation is very guarded.
Oh.
But this early news is welcome. I believe it or not, I want the Diablo phone game to do well. I'd love that. Why would you want it to flop after they've spent this much time on it? Anyway.
Just want to watch the world burn, Rob.
Yeah, I know. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about another game that's had some awfully long longevity. I mean, this game and streaming especially, like so many streamers are on this game, and my husband contributes to this on a regular basis. Not, he doesn't stream it himself. I wish he would, but he plays on other streams and plays a lot of this game.
Yeah, so Dead by Daylight, they sort of announced in a kind of roundabout way that they're working on colorblind modes for the game.
A roundabout way? That's a nice way to put it. It's a very nice way to put it.
So the live balance designer, Ethan Larson, had a personal Twitch stream where he was playing Dead by Daylight, and there's people that were asking him about colorblind mode, to which I guess he gets asked that often, and so he was getting irritated by that, and so he made the comment, you know, it's getting really boring. We've heard it a million times. We know continuing to badger us about it isn't going to change anything. If it gets done, it'll get done when we have time to do it, or if somebody decides that's something that should be done. We know that a lot of players want it. We know it's not a small number. We get it.
Yeah.
It's not the most polite way of putting it.
I saw the clip and it was very much a yikes. You know, I understand that the guy gets asked about this a lot and he's probably sick of being asked about it. But the response that he gave, it's very obvious he's not on the PR
very
side.
Cringy.
And it was very cringy, to put it lightly. And I think the reality is, whereas it's frustrating for him, I think what he needs to realize is that it's incredibly fucking frustrating when you want to play a game, but you can't because it doesn't have the accessibility options you need in order to make the game playable. And I think he just had a huge foot in mouth. And this is a very difficult lesson learned for everybody in the industry who wants to do their own streams on the side and so forth, is that if you open yourself up like that, you're going to have to be prepared that people will come in to talk about your games, and you're going to need to decide where to draw the line. Most people I know have a policy of, I don't talk about my day job when I'm streaming, period. And they don't talk about those games. They don't answer. So it's a non-answer. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, maybe he's spoken about the game before, whatever, this guy did not have the same policy. He spoke his mind about the game, and his mind was not in a good place.
Apparently not. It's like, listen, I'm just trying to kill some people in this game. I mean, come on.
But again, I would
have boundaries, but there's a thing called tact.
Yes.
It was very tactless.
It was very and I would tell this guy again, you think it's frustrating for you, try being one of these people trying to play your game and they can't because of this feature that you keep promising and you keep not implementing. Well, but now Loki, I'm sorry, you can go ahead and finish.
But yeah, they put out, you know, some screenshots showing it's in development and that type of stuff. So, you know, basically, you know, we have been working on colorblind mode for some time and we are planning to release it shortly. Before that, of course, they said this is not how we wanted to reveal this, but we feel it's the right time, that they said in the official Twitter. So yes, they are working on it. They just don't have a date yet when it's going to be made available, but you know, I don't know. That's why PR needs to be more involved sometimes with how people interact with, especially with like different developers and stuff like that. You got to have people that are on board, you know, with the right messaging, because if you're just saying something ridiculous, like either this guy or, you know, back when the guy that was one of those developers that was working on Stadia talking about how, you know, you should be lucky that we don't charge you to stream our games. Okay. You know, maybe some of these people shouldn't be talking to the public.
Yeah. That is a very good point. And, you know, I hate to say it because this goes against everything I really try to preach on this show, but I think here's a good example of maybe streaming isn't for everyone. Maybe you shouldn't do a podcast. This is one of those cases. And I would tell this guy, in the future, I think it's really in your best interest and everyone's best interest, you don't play Dead by Daylight on your stream. Play something else. I think it's in everyone's best interest. You don't do that in the future, including yours. I'm looking at, because you know this guy had a chat with some people, and it probably was not a pleasant one. So I'm sure he was advised of a similar conclusion. Perhaps don't play this game so that people will look to you to be the authority in speaking out on this game when you are not trained on how to speak to the public on this game. So, anyway. That was pretty cringy. Let's move to another cringe topic and talk about Fox News for a minute. I'm sorry, that transition was just way too easy. I saw a cheap shot and I had to take it.
Bang, bang.
Let's talk about this story that's kind of floating around. And it's one of those, it's being by official people. It's saying, no, that isn't really true. But let's talk about it, since this is a show about what gamers are talking about as well. And this is about Mass Effect 2. Jamie, I'm sure you've seen this cross your feed. Apparently, the character Jack in Mass Effect 2 was originally supposed to be pansexual. If you are not familiar with that term, it is a term similar to bisexuality. But for some individuals, to say bisexuality implies that there is a binary when it comes to things like gender. And the term pansexuality is to kind of get around that, essentially, by saying you are attracted to all genders. I am not here to tell people how to define themselves. That is a topic I don't want to address, because if you consider yourself bi, you consider yourself pan, that is a journey for you. And what have you. I just want to make sure people understand when they see that term, that's basically what it means. Jamie, did I do a fair assessment there? Just to make sure.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right. Now, let's talk about Jack. So, and why do we say that with Jack? Because Jack is only romanceable by male Shepard or M. Shep in the game. Originally, she was supposed, or the rumor is, she was supposed to be romanceable by female Shepard as well, which would have made her the first character that actually romances both sexes. Hold on, I know you're all going to say Liara, but the difference with Liara is that the Asari were a mono-gendered race. There is only one gender of Asari that is very female-presenting. You know, so most people just assume all Asaris are female, basically. But there is a difference there. That's what would have been the big deal about Jack, is because Jack would have truly been, you know, a human, essentially, that is a pan-gender character. So,
gender pansexual.
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Pansexual is what I meant to say. Now,
although pangender is real and valid.
Oh no, I'm very well aware. Yes, yes, absolutely. Anyway, anyhow, so, you know, and it's been years since this game came out. This game's over 10 years old, and people kind of wondered, because Jack was presented in a way in the game where you kind of, like, I don't know how to say it, but you kind of assumed that was, you never should assume that type of thing. But there were, like, little context clues in the things she would say and her backstory and so forth that kind of made you think, you know, she probably, when it came to sexuality, was a very, you know, fluid character. And but that didn't end up actually being the case. And so that was a little bit of a surprise. Now, apparently what happened, if rumors are to be believed, is because when the original Mass Effect game launched, Fox News did a whole stupid ass thing where they were getting in there. And I want to say the people that were even on this panel went back and said they'd never played the damn game, which was so fucking frustrating. But anyway, it led to all this criticism about Mass Effect.
But their feelings were still hurt. So, you know, it's valid, right?
God. So apparently the sex scenes in Mass Effect got criticism, and then the fact that there was a non-straight romance, but it's far more complicated than that, honestly. But anyway, as the story goes, apparently because of this Fox News and what ended up getting discussed there, they had to kind of scale back what was happening with Jack. Also kind of adding fuel to the fire, the voice actress for Jack, Courtney Taylor, said she was originally supposed to be a pansexual character. In a quote, "It's funny to me because my understanding is that she was always pansexual. So I don't know if it's just something I inferred from the character or something that she said that got cut. I was surprised there wasn't a female romance possible because that was my understanding. I think it was the time, you know? That was what, 2008, 2009? The industry has changed exponentially since then, and BioWare is leading the charge on that." She's saying this in a nice way to not make BioWare the bad guy, I think, and that is speaking with tact. That's the way to do it. Just an interesting roundabout way. She's able to criticize, yet compliment. See that? Anyway, I don't know if it came down to a budget constraint or maybe someone being like, this is too obvious, because everyone was like, of course she's a lesbian. But my sense was always that she was pansexual and it just didn't get followed through. Of course, the community modded it immediately so you can have it your way. And so that obviously led to an interesting thought is that in the very first game, it was there was a same-sex romance between male Shepard and Kate and Alenko where the lines were taped for it. And you can actually mod those lines back into the game, but it's just they never fully finished the rendering and all that. So if you try to do it with mods, it's a little bit held together by duct tape, we'll say, but you can do it through mods. So anyway.
But this makes me think that when they do the new release,
mm-hmm.
if they might put those options back in.
I would love that so much as just a nice little extra thing, especially since it's all there anyway. You're absolutely right. If they're going to go back and do the remastered trilogy anyway, if the voice acting already exists, if they're going back and fixing Mass Effect 1 anyway, I don't know how much they're changing too, but why not put some of these romances back in? That would be amazing. I would be happy to give my money all over again for that to kind of be the definitive version of the game where Jack is pansexual, as even the voice actress thought she was supposed to be, where Caden was, you know, able to have a gay romance with male Shepard since the first game, the way it was originally written as. I think that I realize for everybody, it's not a big deal. But for me, I think I'd love that. Like I it would be great.
And the thing that people need to realize is that it would make they'd be bisexual or pansexual either way, mm-hmm. which often is fairly erased. I mean, how many times have we had female friends who were in a relationship with a girl and then you hear, oh, they've gone straight. No, they haven't. They're bisexual.
Yeah. Or and it's a real problem with men, too. There's a lot of men who don't come out as bisexual because they just get labeled gay. And so it's, you know, it's a big the bisexual erasure, essentially. It's a huge. So to and again, I'm not trying to get too preachy here, but I'm trying to help people who maybe
aren't.
But it's
part of it.
Yeah, I'm trying to help people who aren't part of the LGBT community. And we have a lot of those that listen to this show who are, you know, cis hetero white dudes. And that's cool. Like this show's for all gamers. But and I'm helping. And you guys have always been supportive. I've made no secret on this show that I'm gay. Jamie makes no secret. She's ace. And, you know, we've had plenty of people from all around the spectrum on this show, thanks to taking phone calls and the guests over the years. But my point is, I'm trying to explain it in a way so that maybe if it's not a big deal for you, you can understand a little bit better maybe why it's a big deal for somebody else. That's all. I'm not trying to, you know, say every video game character in the world needs to be bi. No, but it would be nice to have that representation out there because a lot of times in social settings, it gets erased. Because somebody will say, I'm bisexual, and then it's like, no, you're not, because you're married to somebody the opposite gender. Like, you haven't been bisexual since college. Like, that is shit that people say.
I know. Or like, but you married a guy. And I'm like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So?
Yeah.
Does that change anything?
No.
No?
No. Anyway. Yeah. Thank you. Dijirama S in chat says, Rob, you are not being preachy. You are teaching others, which is always a good thing. Yes, I am coming from a place of teaching. That is what we're trying to do here at OLR. Pixel Pacas in chat says, thanks, OLR. I appreciate you talking about this. Not a problem. It's, you know what? And here's the thing. Like, I'm part of the LGBTQ community, right? I'm a gay dude. But I realize that I am a gay dude that, you know, yes, gay dudes, there's a lot of bullshit that happens and a lot of stuff we have to fight out there. And I've really seen it, you know, kind of change, you know, over the past 20, 25 years. But I very clearly understand and have seen how black and brown gay people have it worse. And transgender.
How about the rampant misogyny among gay mm-hmm. men?
Oh, yeah. It's an issue. And, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Gold star gay. It's a gross term. It really is.
I have punched somebody before for saying, oh, it's okay that I grabbed you. It's because I'm gay. I'm like, no, it's not okay. No, I didn't give you permission to touch
absolutely
me.
Absolutely not okay. And, you know, and transgender men and women, like, you know, they are still a part of that community. And so
it's
I've
been from the beginning.
Absolutely. Who threw the first brick at Stonewall? And my point with all that is that, like, I'm gay, but I recognize that there's a lot of other stuff. And I'm going to use this position to try to teach about the other stuff, too. And I might not be bisexual myself. I'm very comfortably gay. But when I do kind of sit back and think about, like, because I've dated bisexual dudes in the past. you know, and in the, you know, I'm married now, but in the past I've dated bisexual men and I've seen it kind of firsthand. And, you know, maybe I wasn't always perfect myself either. And I've kind of realized over the years, like, oh man, that was a fucked up thing I said. And I should maybe like teach others not to hurt somebody the way I might have in the past. And I think that's the best way you can kind of atone for a mistake you did in the past.
Problematic. Everybody has problematic things in their past. Mm-hmm. The ones who stay problematic are the ones who are the problem. Those who learn and change are the ones who should go out and help others learn and change as well.
Mm-hmm. And then let's see. ACTF says so many things wrong with the world, and especially with minorities and minorities within minorities. Yes, and I think the phrasing may have come off a little, but I totally know what you mean to say there, and yes, absolutely. And Tiger Claw says, what about people who are asexual? I'm sure they're often mocked. Dude, all the time. Like, and maybe it's not my place to explain all the ways, but like I know plenty of asexual people. One of them is loud and proud here on this program. And I'm sure, Jamie, maybe you want to speak on this, but like there is so much bullshit that asexual people have to put up with.
Oh yeah.
Because
we're like even more mythical, I think, than the bisexual people in some cases.
But
yeah.
maybe, and I'm putting my sarcasm voice on, maybe you just haven't found the right person yet, Jamie.
Okay.
To be fair, and where I can relate, that's the same line that's been, this is why we're part of the same family. That's the same line that's been used against me as to why don't I date women? Oh, you just haven't found the right woman yet. It's not that. There's lots of wonderful women in the world. It's not that. I'm just not wired that way. That's not how it works. And like, so.
I love going to people and say, well, when did you decide to be straight?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, some telling a guy who's, you know, oh, you need to go out and get a, you know, get a wife. Like, well, why haven't you found a husband yet? I love turning the conversation around on them.
No, I do.
You know, and like. And like for me being, you know, who and what I am, you know, it doesn't matter who accepts it or not. I don't care. It's not going to change, you know, this person that I am. It's not going to change. Other people's opinion isn't going to change the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with everything going on. The whole COVID thing, all of it. You cannot just delude yourself into pretending something doesn't exist or something isn't real.
Right.
And to treat somebody like there's something wrong with them because they don't fit into your viewpoint of what they should be is disgusting. It is a disgusting habit. It's a disgusting thing that people are teaching their children, and it needs to fucking stop.
And let's have another teaching moment here in chat. I was going to wrap this up, but I need to address this question. Tiger Claw in chat says, is pansexual someone who's attracted to something that isn't human, no. Right? That's actually incorrect, but let me set you on the right path here in a moment. Would furries fall into that? Because there are people who are into anthropomorphic characters. Furries could fall into that category, but pansexual is basically, as I understand it, I am not pansexual myself, but as I understand it, people use that label because they are attracted to somebody regardless of gender. However,
and there are multiple, there are more than two.
There are more than two genders. However, there are a lot of bisexual individuals that still feel that the historical purposes, because I want to make sure this is clear, there's a lot of bisexual people who also feel that way and who will also say, I use the label bisexual because what I'm comfortable with, but I also recognize there's more than two genders. Just because I say I'm bisexual doesn't mean I won't date somebody who's non-binary, you know, or something like that. So I do want to make sure that point, because that is an argument that I think is greater than this show that the community has to kind of figure out, that I also kind of think it's really like, I'm not here to tell somebody what label they need to use to identify themselves, but I will say to educate the comment, pansexuality has nothing to do with interspecies. That's not what it is. It's just all genders, period.
And to offer a really good reason, one of my favorite podcasts, Stuff Mom Never Told You, did several different episodes on outlying bisexuality, different sexualities, gender identity, a bunch of really good episodes. And if you really want something well researched and in depth, I would absolutely say go find those episodes.
Yes.
Because they really go well into detail.
Yes. And let me say one more thing to be fair, and then I will refer you out to other shows and other podcasts to further educate on this topic, as Jamie just did, because I think that's the right idea. But I just want to make sure I'm clear, because when we talk about like furries and that is furries pansexual, furries can be pansexual, furries can be gay, furries can be straight, furries can be anything, just like, you know, humans can be. I think it's also important to state, though, that furry is not always a sexual thing. And I think that most furries I know would want me to make that clear. Being furry isn't instantly a sexual thing. It's not about that for everybody. For some, sure.
Being furry can also mean that you're into that kink.
Yeah.
Just like some people are into leather as a kink.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are into role play of different varieties as their kink.
Mm-hmm.
But furry is more like, I put it along the lines of like the Lolita and everything, as a lifestyle, as a community that you happen to identify with a particular animal to show part of your persona.
Mm-hmm.
So the furries who are into it for a sexual nature, that's furry kink.
Yeah, it's a furry kink, exactly, like a leather kink or like
all know puppies actually kind of marry the furry and leather together.
Yep.
We're getting way too much into the kink community.
We are
now.
Okay. Yeah, let's go back. But hey, you know what? Those of you that have listened to this whole thing while we've completely deviated from the original story and used it as a moment to teach, just thank you guys for letting us teach and letting us kind of like talk about some of these issues that are important to us sometimes.
What I do as a sister.
I know. And I just want to say how much I appreciate this OLR family and the people and Loki, who just sits there and listens. I appreciate everybody that lets us do this and realizes that, you know, we're just here to try to make you maybe think a little bit different, put yourself in some shoes that maybe aren't necessarily yours. And I think so much of what so many people are asking for on social media about gaming and so forth, a lot of representation, all that stuff, so much of it becomes so much more clear when you do take a moment to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, that I think it is important once in a while for us to just like have some little reminders here, a few reminders here on OLR. So thank you for letting us teach, and thank you for listening, especially if you made it all this way. Appreciate it.
And hey, if anyone has questions, I'm sure would be happy to answer a message or three on the Twitters, right?
Absolutely. But now, if you're going to ask me about furries, I'm going to refer you to some people I know that might be willing to answer those questions. So I may not know the answer myself, but I probably know somebody, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And I definitely know, I mean, I think many of our circles in the community overlap. So we know people who know people who know people.
or as Fifth Dream in chat says, refer you. All right. Thank you. That was the cheap joke we needed to move on. All right, let's get to the classic game of the week.
Which has nothing to do with furries.
It doesn't in this case, but it would be okay if it did. All right, we're going to take a trip down memory lane, and Dark Soccer is going to step into the gaming vault and find a game that she thinks, hey, you brats, you should check this game out. Put down your Mass Effects and your newfangled games. You don't need a remaster. You need the classics. Dark Soccer, what is the classic game of the week?
I picked Devil Summoner Soul Hackers, which is a game I still have two copies of, and I forgot who wanted my extra copy, so shrug emoji. But at any rate, it is a role-playing game developed by Atlus that's part of the Megami Tensei series. It is the second of the Devil Summoner sub-series. It was originally published by Atlus for the Sega Saturn in 1997, ported to the PlayStation in 1999, and then got a release on the Nintendo 3DS in 2012. So it takes place in a town called Amami City, which is a very technologically advanced Japanese town, or big city, I should say. And so you are playing a member of a hacker group called the Spookies, who are trying to get into a closed beta for something called Paradigm X, which is an online game that would connect the citizens of the city. And so they meet supernatural forces while working on it, and have to work with this hacker group to see what's going on, because demons suddenly pop up, including one called Nemissa, who is a demon that possesses his friend Hitomi. So it began development in 1996 after the first Devil Summoner. Character design was done by Kaneko Kazuma, and the original producer was Okada Koji. And so while none of the other Soul Hacker, I'm sorry, the first two versions of Soul Hackers never did get the US release, the 3DS version was localized. And it actually had a fairly positive reception. Yeah, I'm hacking them souls, Phoenix. Anyway, like I said, it is a role-play game. You navigate your dungeons in a first-person view, and you have puzzles, and you fight in turn-based battles. You have one or two human characters in your party, but you also have the ability to summon up to four demons to fight with you. And you'll get access to these demons by speaking to enemy demons and negotiating with them. So you have to answer questions or intimidate or give them things that they look for. And then you can fuse all of your demons into a single demon if you want to. It's kind of crazy. That was actually fairly novel for its time. And then you have to manage your demons based on their personalities, alignment, abilities. So like a friendly one would be healing or defensive. A sly one would attack enemies by themselves. But if you give them an ability that they don't want to use, think of like Pokemon like that way, there is a risk that they will refuse to do that or do something completely different or not do anything at all. And different demon alignments, they can choose not to cooperate. They can be antagonistic toward each other. So, but you are able to also get, at these marketplaces, magnetite that is fuel for demons. And if you run out of magnetite, then your demons start taking damage. So that's pretty much as it is, you know, so you're, so you are, you know, going through, you have other members of your group, and you have characters named Six, Lunch, Yuichi, and then Hitomi. And so they were basically, you know, doing, you know, just pranks, shenanigans, and then it goes all downhill from there. So this has nothing to do with Pokemon. Although the whole demon, you know, thing, the way that you treat them, I would say would be a more complicated play on, I guess, the Pokemon kind of theme, you know.
Well, and there were a lot of games not long after, and this is kind of in that era of not long after Pokemon, that were, you know, trying to I don't want to say copy it, because obviously this game isn't that, but you know, kind of find the similar formula, find the secret that you know helps the game be successful. I don't know.
But also, several of the Persona, you know, people who later went on to the Persona games worked on this one too, including, Shigenori, Soejima, who was actually responsible for sub-character designs and item graphics and, character portraits. But basically this one tried to move it around to different points of view and, of the different characters as they went through the game, and you know, even tried to work in like a devil motif and design into some of the characters. A lot of this is just really embedded into the game and has shown up in later on games. So there were you know, a few different things that went on. Like this particular character, the main protagonist, was not a trained summoner like the first one. This one had to learn everything as you went along, so it was actually pretty interesting. And they really pushed a little bit more of that cyberpunk setting with this game and used like completely different styles of music to make them go together. Like, for example, if music being the fusion of jazz and electronica. So, and that was composed by Meguro Shoji. Did really good work. He also did work on Machin X. So, but anyway, the game itself was released for the Sega Saturn on November 13th, 1997, and had a supplementary disc that was called Devil Summoner Soul Hackers Akuma Zenshul 2 that came out on December 23rd of the same year. And that contained a postcard entry for a draw from one of 1,000 copies of an extra dungeon. Because the game was so popular, it got a PlayStation release on April 8th, 1999. And then there was, of course, a Sony budget released on July 27th, 2000. The PlayStation port had new story events, including the Paradigm X Casino and the version of the Devil Zenshul 2 dungeon. The Nintendo 3DS version came out. It was announced to be released in 2012 on August 30th. And the port was based off the PlayStation version, but also included some different enhancements to it. There was a new demo that came out. All kinds of just goodies were put into it. Some redesign for some of the music, some of the sound. And then the game was released in Japan on the eShop on December 25th, 2014.
Oh, sorry, not you.
Sorry. All right. Anyway, so it did get a North American.
My mouth was away from the mic.
I wasn't even looking at you. It just got quiet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anyway, the game was announced for North American release December 2012, and it was published April 16th, 2013 by Atlas USA, and then as a digital download July 2nd. So Soul Hackers is one of the 10 original Megami Tensei characters to be rated M for mature. It did get a European release on September 20th, 2013, and digital on September 25th. So for the localization, they tried to localize the PlayStation version, but because of Sony of America's content approval policy, it didn't quite make it out. So the 3DS version is the first one to be released outside of the U.S. They were trying to treat it like a new game as opposed to a port in the U.S. So the translation part took about a month. Localization took around 8 months. And they tried to introduce some elements of humor, you know, like the Japanese script did. And so they, so if they didn't think it would work well as a direct translation, they did a little bit of fourth wall breaking. So a few things that weren't quite in the original. So anyway, the 3DS version of Soul Hackers had some average reviews. So a lot of people enjoyed the battle system, but some people thought that there just was a little bit more that could have been done. Like the dungeon had some blurry wall textures and that it was getting monotonous. But they thought the battle system was a good amount of reward for the effort that it took. So when it first was released, Soul Hackers sold 160,850 units in its first week. And as of 2007, the game had sold 258,679, became the 27th best-selling Saturn title in Japan. Hmm. And of course, you know, the fact that we got it in the U.S. at all was, I'd say, fairly good. It was great. But the one that we got, I say, was pretty outdated by the time that we got it, you know. If, you know, we go back and play it on Saturn, heck yeah, that looks great, you know? Not everything in bringing it over worked well for the 3DS. So, and I do have an extra copy of Soul Hackers. So let me know if you want it. We'll talk.
All right.
The case is cracked, I think, but the game still works.
All right. Well, thank you so much for because I have to admit, this is a game I didn't know much about at all. So it's, I like how sometimes the classic game of the week is a very like obvious thing, you know, for lack of a better word, like a game. You know,
oh,
I've
yeah.
A
I was going to give it to Bobby. All right, Bobby, it's yours. Oh, okay. I was going to give the game to Bobby. Bobby, remind me to send it to you.
And then sometimes you get a game where it's like, what the hell is this? Or I'm sure like there's probably two or three people in chat that are like, fuck yeah, this game, you know, but the rest of us have no idea. So it's fun to sometimes learn about a new game. So,
yeah. All right. Well, and you know, I have a big love for a lot of those Saturn RPGs. And
of course.
Just some of the, I mean, one game I would totally love to, I need to actually, I guess, burn myself a translated copy is Black Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just some amazing RPGs that came out in the Saturn that never saw the light of the day in the US unless they had been ported to PlayStation.
I think it's no secret that if you go through the history of the classic game of the week, which you can do over on the Orange Lounge Radio Wiki, if you go
which I
through,
rely on, thank you for updating it.
If you actually go back to that and look through it, you're going to find that the classic games of the week, they're kind of disproportionately Sega, but that's okay. It's you know, it's Jamie's segment, and that's the game she.
All right,
a lot of the stuff.
If someone has time, I'm looking at several people in chat. Make a chart for me. Make me a pie chart.
A pie chart. You want spreadsheets? You want cross tabs?
No, I don't. Spreadsheets are kind of, I want a pie chart.
I just want pie.
Well, we have monkey bread. Dan bought monkey bread. But anyway, I want a couple of pie charts. One of them by publisher, like original, you know, company publishing it, developing. And then one by system. Like original system release, I guess, that I reviewed it for.
All right. What she's asking for, we need a classic game access database so we can run reports.
Crew access. Right. I'm going to go get my monkey bread.
Yes. Get your bread.
I
you
have
deserve
more monkey
it.
Monkey bread.
But don't miss rapid fire news.
I worked hard.
All right. That's what we're going to get into next. Is our rapid fire news segment and get into that. First, before we do that, I got to ask Loki, because I didn't call this out earlier in the show, but is that not President Cat running behind you tonight, the game?
It is President Cat.
Or is, okay, I'm sure most OLR fans know the story by now, but if you didn't, because this was inauguration week after all, this would have been back in 2008. It was a long time ago, okay? Because this is when Obama ran for office the first time. And yes, this show was on the air. It was already over 5 years old at that point. But we were doing release dates, which is a segment that's coming up here on our show quite shortly. We're going to get into release dates. For those of you watching live, can see it over there on the sidebar. And we came across this game, which I believe the name was Tsukiban Sōchau Renoui.
It was Tsukiban Sōchau Renoui.
Chao Renoui, yeah.
Okay.
It was basically like a corporate delinquent girl, but I misread Sōchau because, mm-hmm. I mean, I knew what it meant, but it was hard to describe. So it was like President something.
And thus the name President Cat was born. We started calling this game President Cat. And it kind of led to this whole soapbox moment where we were talking about the Nintendo Wii. And all the, because that's what this game was for, and all the shovelware that was coming out for Nintendo Wii at the time. And I think, you know, and this actually ties into the classic game of the week that Jamie just did, really, because this was a note of, we're sitting here going, why does this game only exist in Japan? Quick, how many of you in chat, look at this. This is Cat doing crazy shit out in the real world, like skateboarding down a hill and all this stuff. This looks fucking ridiculous. How many of you in chat would play this? And of course, all of your hands shot up immediately because... When have you had like a game here starring a cat doing things? And so the concept of President Cat was just kind of like ludicrous, but at the same time, is it the silliest thing you've ever heard about on the Wii? Not by a long shot. So why wasn't the Wii getting more stuff like this, especially when it had already been released in Japan? So this led to a whole thing about we need to localize President Cat. And we actually tweeted the developer. Now, here's the funny kind of other side of this. Apparently, this game didn't do well in Japan, if you are to believe.
It was the worst-selling game on the Wii,
if,
apparently.
Okay, did anybody more than a former Kotaku writer claim to have the facts behind that? Because I still question that to this day. I cannot understand how this would possibly be the worst selling game, especially when people over here were importing it. It only sold 100 copies. 10 of them were over here. I don't think so.
Yeah.
So I never saw the receipts to justify those headlines. I'm sorry. So anyway, my point with that whole thing is but we did get some like minor coverage on some of the blogs because the company behind President Cat actually noticed us, because this was back when Twitter was still kind of new. And so it was like, why are all these people in America getting excited about this game that we're not even releasing there? And so they started tweeting us, thank you, we think. Thank you for being a fan. Please look forward to the game. You know, like those types of things. I think not fully understanding what
we're actually checking the Wikipedia page to see if we're still mentioned in it. Our article that we were in, I found it.
Yeah.
It's still from Destructoid. I'll link it in chat.
And DJ Rama S in chat says, fact, one of the cons I attended, ZenkaCon, got this game in its gaming room either 2008 or 2009. And yeah, like, I fail to see how, because the rabble start, and you know, it's the one thing we kind of did here at OLR, and I'll say we started it, and the rabble got kind of out there, and now, you know, anime cons are bringing it in and so forth, because yes, you know, as it turns out, people love cats. Even people who are allergic are kind of like, man, I wish I wasn't allergic to cats. You know, there's at least kind of usually that moment. Sorry to anybody out there who is allergic to cats who might feel differently, but I still feel that the vast majority of people love cats. More people love cats than love Madden. That's a fact.
That is a fact.
So, anyway. So, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get on a tangent, but we haven't talked about that little thing in a while, and Loki's background made me think of that. And how to this day, we never did get our localized copy. Apparently, the publisher did go under not long. So, maybe that's the only receipt.
Dorudon.
Yeah, that's the only receipts I've seen to that maybe this game didn't do that well after all. But, So, anyway, sorry. I don't know where I was going with that, but
it
brought back
memories.
Dude,
this one's $109 for it now, and I want the game.
What's that?
I have the game. You can have my copy.
Okay, thank you.
Or you can borrow my copy. I don't care. But, like, I have it still. I have the box copy. No, I thought it was, like, right here, but that's not it. But, no, I still have it somewhere.
I totally want to just play through it now that I'm getting better with reading.
All right. Anyway, Pod Culture says, quick, maybe we can chip in and buy the IP for VOG. I think this came up on a show half year or a year ago or so, and I said, I'd buy the rights, but I'm just going to give them to YYR because I'm not going to be. But now that Loki makes games, maybe I have to retract that. Sorry, Aaron, but you helped create a monster here in Loki, and now maybe we got to give the rights to Loki. I don't know. So
maybe we should just let it be what it is. There's been already, we had the Cat President game. We had the people on from that. just let the meme die.
No. I need to finally get off my butt and make my, my visual novel.
Yeah. Yes.
With one of the characters being President Cat, who secretly is the CEO of Orange Lounge.
Okay, so speaking of visual novels, then there was a game, and I think, was it 2012 or 2016, there was a game called Cat President that ended up coming out on Steam. And of course, I reached out.
And a sequel.
Yeah, I reached out to the developer, and I was like, Do you know who we are? And of course it's no, but he came on the show and he was a great sport. He had a great sense of humor. All his motivations for the game were perfect. And it's still out there. Check it out. And so he had no idea about this, you know, whole dumb thing we had done in 2008 with President Cat and everything. But, you know, we wanted to give the game our blessing, and we did. And he ended up making a sequel either in 2016 or this most recent election. All the years are blurring together.
It was
you guys.
2020.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Yeah, October.
Yeah. So, and great to see him still being successful and so forth. So maybe we'd buy the rights and give it to him. I don't know. Anyway, let's move on. We don't have the money. Let's stop joking. All right. Oh, Bobby's digging up all these old tweets. Wow. Y'all are putting your search engines to work on Twitter tonight. Now this, okay, so the account still exists over at Renault.
What is President Cat?
Who actually tweeted, what is President Cat? That was the official account of the game.
They still have followers.
Yeah, as they should.
even though they're gone.
Somebody needs to tweet them, "You there? You stopped answering my calls." All right. Moving on. Enough, enough, enough. All right. I don't know if I ever saw that tweet. What is President Cat? Seriously? Someday, like long after this show is gone and I'm gone, I want you to print that tweet out and bury me with it.
I just can't wait for the articles about this brand new Nintendo game that's coming out that's all about pooping on things. that just screams, you know, clickbait headlines. So it's just a matter of time.
Well, you know, and what's interesting about that whole thing, and shout out to YYR as well, because I did beta test his version of Pixel Poops on Steam. And if y'all haven't checked that out in the VOG Network Discord, go, you know, YYR posted a lot of great info how you can check that game out too. And it's funny. It's interesting because even though when YYR did it on the Vita, it maybe sold a few copies with OLR listeners and, you know, a very limited type of audience.
It has its own... what was it? Metacritic page.
Does it?
Yeah, because so him putting it on Steam triggered a bunch of different automated things on different websites. So, for example, GameSpot has its own dedicated forums to it. They have its own Metacritic page. Stuff like that. It's just funny. But yeah, even the Vita version has its own Metacritic page. But there's no reviews, obviously.
Well, we need to load it up with some 4-star. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do anything against the rules. But my point I was going with all this is that now that you have this NES version, you know, maybe that's the thing that suddenly gets people to notice. And I think it's going to have a positive effect for what YYR did originally as well, because it's the whole this is so fucking weird to talk about, but the whole franchise is going to get a little more boost and a little more notice because you'd not just have the Steam release and people are going to notice it there, but this Nintendo crazy thing you're doing, it's going to be there. And I guess there's also this Commodore 64 thing that Aaron has planned, and who knows who's going to see it from there. So it's great anyway.
And it is on it. And the first one is on Steam. The waiting page, the page landing page is there. So if you want to go wishlist that, that'll help with the algorithms. Boost it up
smart.
A little bit or something like that. Tentatively, we're looking at February 3rd, but it may get pushed a little bit. We'll see. I'm just rushing to get mine done. That's kind of what we're waiting on.
I think he plans to hit that date. I don't think it's getting bumped back anymore. I mean,
I think we're going to it's probably going to be the 3rd. If not, then maybe like a week or so. Like, not... It's getting pretty close to the 3rd, I think.
ActDeft in chat is saying, so when is President Cat going to be Classic Game of the Week? It's over 10 years old. In my opinion, please. Jamie has to save that for a very fucking special day. Like, it's her segment, do what you want. But in my opinion, that's the one Jamie pulls out episode 1000 or the last episode of OLR, inevitably, whenever that is. You know, that's the one you save for a rainy day. Jamie, is your thoughts on that? On President Cat being Classic Game of the Week?
Either that or... I don't know. We'll see.
No, we'll see.
I may have an idea.
Whenever she damn well feels like it.
No one ever helped me with Gwen's thing, so...
All right.
Maybe it'll be a charity giveaway.
Okay. All right. Let's move on and do some rapid fire news. Let's travel around the world and check out some other news from around the gaming universe. Loki, why don't you start us off?
Hey, let's talk about what you're going to get for free with Xbox Live Gold now that it's $120 a year, Neskin. So starting in February, we're going to be getting Gears 5 on Xbox One and Resident Evil. Those are going to be your two Xbox One games. Dandara, Trials of Fear Edition, and Indiana Jones and the Emperor's Tomb, and Lost Planet 2. So, ooh, 5 games in the month. Not bad. And then, of course, there's lots of fun mods out there for older games, and one of those games being NBA Jam Tournament Edition from 1994. So they have a brand new mod that brings the roster of players to current day, and they have so they're calling it NBA Jam 2K21, and there's a lot of new characters that they added, and of course along with that a lot of hidden characters that are added to it as well. So, for example, they've got Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat in there. They have the Flash. There's looks like what do we got here? Kevin Hart has been added there. Hulk Hogan. they had Jean-Claude Van Damme in there. I was trying to see some of the other ones that like kind of really stuck out.
This is funny because we were just talking about NBA Jam last week.
Yeah, so
it's funny that it looks timed, right?
Yeah, but it looks pretty funny. So they've got the whole patch that you can download out there, and it'll update your game with all these new players and everything. So that's pretty awesome. So go check it out.
All right. Let's get into some other news and talk about Puzzle Quest is making a comeback. There's a Puzzle Quest 3 that actually was announced, 505 Games, because they actually recently acquired Infinity Plus 2, which was the studio in Australia that made Puzzle Quest to begin with. They have announced a free to play sequel called Puzzle Quest 3. Of course we hear free to play and it's like, you know, they didn't really do – so there were other Puzzle Quest games after Puzzle Quest 2, but it was free to play like Marvel Puzzle Quest and things like that. Those games weren't necessarily bad per se, but they weren't quite as exciting, I think, as Puzzle Quest 1 and 2. I don't know. I guess it depends what you consider exciting. I liked the whole like single player quest type of elements that 1 and 2 brought to the table, so I would like to see that in Puzzle Quest 3. But we know very little about it beyond a very vague teaser trailer and the fact that it's supposed to be coming up this year. So, by the way, Marvel Puzzle Quest apparently was a licensed spinoff. It wasn't actually from the same studio, so that is kind of interesting. Also worth noting, a delay this time, the Uncharted movie delayed again. I'll give you some guesses why with everything going on in the world, but it has been pushed back again to February 11th, 2022, considering I don't even think they've shot a frame of the movie yet. I wouldn't be surprised, quite honestly, if it gets bumped back again, considering everything that Hollywood has been going through with, COVID and, you know, all that. This isn't particularly surprising, but we'll just wait a little longer for that. Honestly, fine. Maybe February 2022 is when it will be safe for me to go to a movie theater, even if I still have to wear a mask in the theater. At least I can go and I can watch the damn movie the way I ought to. That would be very nice. So we'll see. All right. Dark Soccer, what do you have for us?
Well,
I'm sorry, just a quick correction. Sorry, chat corrected me. They have been shooting the movie. There's set photos that are out there. I apologize. I didn't think they'd even started shooting it yet, but apparently the post-production is still going to need some extra time. Sorry, Jamie, but that was an important correction.
Okay. Well, I'm sure a lot of people remember Don't Starve, great game. The company that made it... Clay Entertainment?
I think so.
They were acquired by Tencent, and Tencent, as we know, is responsible for League of Legends and Clash of Clans. They acquired a majority stake in Clay Entertainment. Other things that Clay made other than Don't Starve, they did Mark of the Ninja as well. But they apparently are still in full autonomy of creative operations, so they should still be in control of their stuff. We'll see what happens with it. And then in other news, Imamura Takaya, who designed Star Fox and Tingle, has left Nintendo.
Guess we'll never see any Tingle again.
That's not true necessarily.
So he said on his Facebook, it was translated, "Today is my last day of coming to work. I took a selfie with the empty office building. It feels pretty sad to think about not coming here anymore. Hats off to myself for 32 years of hard work." he started in 1989 as a graphic artist, designed vehicles and pilots for F-Zero. He designed Captain Falcon. He did the Star Fox franchise, created Fox McCloud and the other characters, and of course, Tingle.
I'm going to remember that for the day I retire. Kudos to me.
There's more.
I made this possible.
The general manager of Takara Tomy Arts, Yodo Tomo, So that that Imamura would be working with a company as a freelancer. So we'll see.
All right. All right. Well, let's travel around the world and check out some release dates of games that are coming a little sooner than whatever is worked on next by Imamura. So, Loki.
We've got Atelier Ryza 2, Lost Legends, and The Secret Fairy on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5. Cyber Shadow on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and Xbox One. Disgaea 6, Defiance of Destiny on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4. Galgun Returns on Nintendo Switch. Martian Forest, Mylan, and the Forest Gift on PC, Nintendo Switch, and PlayStation 4. The Medium on PC and Xbox Series X. Allegiant on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Sword of the Necromancer on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. The Yakuza Remastered Collection on PC and Xbox One. Bonkies on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Buddy Mission Bond on Nintendo Switch. Gods Will Fall on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One, and Stadia. The Pedestrian on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. Resident Evil Zero. I'm sorry. I thought it was Resident Evil Zero, but it's actually ReZero. Starting Life in Another World, The Prophecy of the Throne on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and possibly Super Meat Boy Forever on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. That's it.
All right. Going over to Japan and checking out the releases there, you know, it's been slow for a couple weeks and they're making up for it this week. It's a picking back up again for sure. Over on the Nintendo Switch, Marchen Forest, Mylene and the Forest Gift comes out this week. Umeniko When They Cry, Saku, Nikobako to Muso no Kokyo Ukyoku comes out this week. Pang Adventures is out this week. Alpaca Ball All-Stars. I didn't know there was enough Alpaca Ball to make an All-Stars, but apparently there is, and that is out this week. As is a little game called Disgaea 6. Yes, the Disgaea series still around. And Defiance of Destiny is out this week, as is Galgun Returns. All of that on the Nintendo Switch. Taking a look at the PlayStation 5, nothing this week. They have a new title next week, but nothing this week. But the 4 has many of those same titles. Marchen Forest, also out on the 4. The Umeniko When They Cry and Disgaea 6. All of those also out on the PlayStation 4 this week. Another title I missed, also on the Switch and PlayStation 4, Ghost Runner is out this week as well. So things are picking back up again over in Japan. How about the UK, Dark Sakura?
Three things. On the 28th for Switch, Pang Adventures Buster Edition. On the 29th, Anima Arcade Edition for PlayStation, and also for PlayStation, Ghost of a Tale Collector's Edition.
All right. Let's get back
on the 29th. Sorry.
Let's get back into some more news, and then we'll get to your topics over in our chat room and our mailbag. But first, more news. Loki.
Yeah, so apparently Valve, Capcom, and Bethesda have been fined $9.5 million because they were geo-blocking PC games on the Steam storefront. So what that basically means is, of course, not allowing folks to purchase games in other regions. So, for example, say the price for a certain game in Germany was cheaper than in Europe, they would disallow them from purchasing it for a lower price, letting them buy the cheaper version of the game. Apparently, geo-blocking breaches the EU antitrust rules, so they were fined around 6.2 million euro. And apparently, the owners of Steam, of Valve, chose not to cooperate with the commission. They were fined 1.6 million euro as well.
Wow.
So, yeah. I don't know if that's going to make any changes, but it sounds like they're just not cooperating with it, the price of business.
Or if they're actually taking it seriously. It sounds like they may just fully not pay. And that could lead to some heck of a consequences. So I would be interested to see what the follow-up to this is going to be. Like, what's the comment? What's what's the next step here? It sounds like they didn't even try to fight it.
Yeah.
They didn't take it seriously.
Yeah, basically, the executive vice president, Margaret Vestager, said such practices deprive European Union consumers the benefit of the EU digital single market and the opportunity to shop around for the most suitable offer in the EU.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. So,
I don't know. Well, sometimes, you know, if the fine's small enough, they just cost of doing business and they'll keep on doing it, especially if they made more than that kind of money selling it for a higher price. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Need to raise those fines.
I'll be curious to see what comes from this as well, or if they actually pull out of business in some of those countries. I don't know. I kind of doubt that. I doubt it goes to that, but it is very interesting that none of these companies kind of took this seriously, and now we're here, and they could face getting kicked out of the countries if they don't pony up the money or try better to fight it, I guess. So this is one of those things to keep your eye on, I think. This is probably not the last thing we've heard about this, for sure. So.
Yeah.
Something else I don't think we've seen the last of. Well, I know we have not seen the last of ever. People making their own peripherals and devices at home. But I would love if Nintendo actually did something with this one. They won't. They'll cease and desist it, if nothing else. But we can dream. This person made a homebrew Labo kit. In other words, they made it out of cardboard. I don't think they really made it.
I'm glad someone's actually doing something with that. Because
I don't even think
I've thrown most of mine away.
They didn't do actual Labo. It's like a concept that they made out of cardboard called Labo Fit Adventure. Mike Choi is the guy's name, a hardware hacker. He built the Labo Fit Adventure cart kit. And what happens is that you use a ring con, so the ring controller with Ring Fit, to steer and squeeze, basically, if you want to keep, you know, kind of go the right direction and I assume use the boost or items. But you also have to pedal a bike, and that's the part that's made out of cardboard, above a certain speed if you want to keep going. So you have to actually pedal to keep the cart moving. It's built around a tap-bow robot that will press Joy-Con buttons when you get signals from the Ring-Con and the bike. Other games technically will work, but it's really built with Mario Kart in mind. There's a whole to-do on the YouTube channel about that. And you know what? I'd love to see, you know, Nintendo take this concept into an actual Mario Kart game. Obviously, you have to make some concessions for this particular one to work. But as a proof of concept, I know a lot of people are responding very positively to Ring Fit Adventure during this quarantine. I could stand to play a little more of it myself, to be quite honest. But I think these ideas, especially with those bikes, the Peloton, those bikes are getting more and more popular. Like, this is a great thing for Nintendo to try to capitalize on, honestly. Even if it's made out of cardboard, why not? They could do it cheaper than a Peloton. So I think Nintendo should get on it. I think this guy's doing him a favor. We'll see if they really do or not. So, all right. Moving on, Dark Sakura.
So Microsoft filed a very interesting patent, kind of a scary. They filed a patent that would let the company digitally revive deceased family and friends using that individual's personal information. So it would create like an AI-based chatbot that would be built on that profile that uses their image, their voice data, social media posts, electronic messages, and other personal information to try to recreate that person as a rudimentary, not really rudimentary, but sort of like an AI of sorts. And they even went further saying you could use a 2D or 3D model of that person. But that's scary.
Yeah.
I've never watched Black Mirror, but yeah, it sounds like that episode.
That's what Orange Wright says in chat. Isn't this a Black Mirror episode? And Pod Culture says that is fucking scary. Well, yes. I don't think I'm in a hurry to talk to any of my family members in the virtual way. You know, once in a while, not to get like too depressing, but I'm just going to be honest. Like once in a while, I like to go to my mom's Facebook page. It's a nice little place in the internet where she posted some things and she has some pictures. So when I want to remember, as much as I loathe Facebook, it is a nice thing for me to go back and look at. But like
grandmoms.
What's that?
I go to my grandmom's.
Yeah. But I don't want the page to suddenly start posting again like it is her. And that's essentially what this is, you know. In fact, actually, this led to an interesting thing. So my dad will sometimes get on my mom's old laptop, which she's been logged into Facebook for like 5 years. Hopefully she didn't get logged out the other night like everyone else did, apparently. I didn't get logged out, but apparently a ton of people got logged out of Facebook. But my dad has logged into her Facebook like within the past year. So she'll show online, but it's my dad. But even that, you can imagine that makes some people go, what? Like, did the account get hacked? What's going on? So, anyway. Yeah, I don't want this chatbot to exist for things like that. However, as much as people are sitting here going, this is creepy, this is wrong, this is yikes. What about Tupac performing in a hologram? Like, I realize that's a kind of a different example, but there does seem to be some sort of demand out there for getting closer to deceased people. I just think it's deceased people you don't actually know. And I think that's the key difference. None of you out there know Tupac. And insert any hologram performance here, because I think they've said they were going to do it for others too. And of course, in the moment I'm blanking, but they've talked, like, I think Michael Jackson might've been one of them at one point. They were talking about doing like a hologram thing for, and so forth.
Gorillas.
That's different though. Cause don't
I know it's different, but I'm saying that it's the same,
technology. Yes.
Yeah.
But Gorillaz is actually there behind the hologram actually playing. So it's very different, but you're right. That technology is what led to, and Hatsune Miku, if you will, that technology is what led to, like Tupac holograms and things like that. So.
And, you know, and the one thing though that I didn't go in and say any more about this is that it would also, it could be used as an education tool for historical reenactment, I guess, of a person from way back when, although that's also going to be kind of iffy. It depends on how recently deceased they are, I guess. Like, what about for those who were before social media existed, where they don't have like such information on that? They only have, you know, like some sound recordings or some like hearsay or things that people wrote, but not necessarily what you write always reflects your personality. Not always.
Can they let some people I know talk to Jesus so Jesus can tell them? That's not what I meant. That's what I'd like to see.
Maybe next to do Santa Claus.
They already have a tracker for where is Santa Claus in the world on Christmas Eve.
That's a NORAD thing from, yeah.
DJ Rama in chat says there's more to this. Microsoft said this would be for dead historical people too. And yeah, I can see where I think more people might be interested in that.
What I just said?
Yeah, it is. But I would just want to make sure all the comments are getting through.
Well, I can't wait. Like, hopefully it doesn't learn from the people it chats with, because I can't wait for, like, you know, Abraham Lincoln to become all of a sudden horribly racist because of the internet.
Well, he actually kind of was. But
okay, insert non-racist.
Never learn anything about your heroes.
What I'm trying to say.
Tiger Claw in chat says, I think this might not go well for some people. Having somebody you know who passed away being brought back in this way has the potential to mess with you mentally, as you could break down mentally at how much you miss that person. Yeah, that part. This really isn't for everyone. I think if Microsoft focuses on the historical celebrity side of things, they might have something as interesting as reading your Zodiac in the morning. But that's really, I hope something like this is for entertainment purposes only, and that is the end of it. It just seems like a weird thing to be messing with. So, Zen Monkey in chat says, when I went to Disneyland, I thought those robot presidents were real people. Hey, they're convincing. That Disney robot technology is pretty convincing. Like, when they have, like, Disneyland and World both have it, but Disneyland has that whole Lincoln that steps up and gets out of the chair and gives the speech. That shit looks real. That's real.
Well, like, done. Well, yeah, and they touch up those animatronics, though, like, I think every couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it was just the best place to sit when it was so freaking hot outside.
Yes. And Disney...
Because no one goes in there.
Disney World has that ride where all the presidents are in it, and then I think Lincoln's at the end. But Disneyland doesn't do that. It's just like an auditorium you go in, and it's like...
All the presidents.
Is it all the presidents in the Disneyland one, too?
No, the hall.
Oh, the hall. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I think there might be some other people there with Lincoln, but it's not everybody. Like, it doesn't go through the controversies of, boy, they made Trump look horrible in there. And it's like, well, you know, somebody had it out, I'm sure. Bobby says, Disney World has the current president stand up and give the same speech. It's not Lincoln. It's whoever is currently the president. Okay, that's the difference. At land, it's just always Lincoln. Okay, I get it now. All right. One of these days, I'll get to Disney World, but very clearly the plan to go this year to ride the new Tron ride is not happening. So it will be whenever...
I go.
What?
When you go, I go.
Yeah. It'll be whenever that Tron ride opens. I heard they stopped construction on it at some point. So yikes. I swear to God, if this whole COVID thing fucks up that Tron ride for me, I'm going to be so mad.
No, so mad. I doubt it.
Yeah. All right. Bobby says, yay, Vogue trip, because when Rob goes, I go, oh, my impact. I feel so influential. Thank you. All right. It'll probably be coupled with Dragon Con one of these years. Maybe
they'll
not
just retheme
this year,
it after like Seoul or something.
They
should get you. I should get you in on the little cosplay group, though, that I'm doing for Dragon Con if it happens.
Oh,
we're
all going as
Leia.
Oh, that's cute. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. What's next? Loki, I think you're up next.
All right. So, shocker, people staying home, so they spend more on gaming in 2020. But apparently, spending is up quite a bit. Almost $57 billion, so $56.9 billion was spent on gaming in the year 2020. You can thank the pandemic. You can thank brand new consoles coming out. Apparently, the increase, of course, it was hardware increase was up by 35% over 2019, and apparently, the U.S. gaming industry, which raked in that $56.9 billion, which was an increase of 27% overall over 2019's figures as well. So, yeah. Let's see. And the big games of the year, I don't think they really list anything on here. Of course, last year, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, Black Ops Cold War, still doing, you know, one of the top selling games of the month of December. Yeah. So big, no shock there, you know, expected considering that was how it was trending all year long. I'm curious to see how 2021 works out, considering that I think things are going to stay about the same, maybe getting better towards the end of the year. I doubt that we're going to see much in a difference in those numbers being high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it also kind of depends like what they're able to get out, because, you know, they got those big consoles at the end of last year. If there's a new Switch, if that actually ends up being a thing, then I think we could look at, you know, we're still going to have some big numbers. But otherwise, we are kind of waiting for the end of the year for the big titles to go with the new consoles. We're waiting for the Halo 4 Xbox X. We're waiting for the Horizon Forbidden West for PlayStation 5, which is the assumed big title this holiday. So you know, that's kind of the big thing. And then if Nintendo puts a new console out on top of that, that'll be a pretty big deal, too. I'm not sure the pandemic changes much of that. I think that stuff's all going to be in demand. And as I think has been said before many times, the pandemic is probably not going to be something like a Switch. It's not just going to be, oh, tomorrow, everything's back. It's going to be a lot more gradual than that, I think, as more and more people get vaccinated and so forth. It's just unfortunate that some of these things like Disney World and conventions, or Disney World the old way, and convention will be the last, you know, and sporting events and major arenas full of people will be the last things to come back. You know, I think we'll be at restaurants again and can feel relative safety about it, especially if you've been vaccinated by summer, I would hope. But it just depends on how fast they can get those vaccines moving. So anyway, Bobby says in chat, my mom got her first poke on the 20th. I'm happy. I'm frustrated because my dad is in his 80s and still hasn't had it done. And he's trying, but it's just part of the problems California is having in general. So the fact that they opened it up to 65 and older just makes it even harder for my dad, who would have qualified under 75 and over. However, I am trying to be, you know, non-selfish and realize, you know, a lot of people over 65 are at risk. So I just hope they get them out faster. But yeah. I feel better about it since Wednesday than I have in a long time. I don't know about some of you, but I feel a lot better. So I'm not trying to get political, but sometimes I can't help it. All right. Moving on.
Yeah.
One more story for you guys. And this has to do, I'm really excited about this because this is an old title coming back for the Nintendo Switch, and this is a good one. A recent rating from the South Korean Ratings Board indicates that SNK versus Capcom, Match of the Millennium, is on its way to the Nintendo Switch. This was originally a Neo Geo Pocket Color game in 1999, but of course it's, you know, the start of a series that eventually brought us, I mean, Capcom SNK was different because it was the other company, but I feel like maybe this will be the first little snowball in the avalanche that gets us one of my favorite fighting, probably but still my favorite fighting game of all time, Capcom versus SNK 2. But hey, I will take this. I would actually pick this up, SNK versus Capcom. It's been rated by the South Korean Ratings Board, so it seems like this is certainly incoming. So I love this first comment on this news post. Now we need the best one ever. Capcom versus SNK 2. Comments are good tonight. What is it?
No. I need Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
That's true. That was pretty good.
That was good. They always rumored a sequel and then it never happened.
Well, they also said that it was also rumored to be coming out for Switch and that didn't happen. So
yeah true. ActDef
yes,
says,
I agree, ActDef. Why not both?
Yeah, why not? But why not all of the above? All of the above. Correct answer. All right. Let's go into the listener roundtable where we take your comments in our chat room over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. If you have any questions for us or comments, we'll get to those. We also like to get to our emails. participate@orangelaundryradio.com if you want to send us an email. I don't know if I saw anything in there. However, Dark Sakura, if that spam email is still in there, you really should read it. Just redact anything that's identifying.
Over the air?
Yes, it's fucking funny.
Well, we did get a real email. So it? I'll read.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Read the spam first.
Okay, read the spam first. So, because this, y'all probably saw it on Twitter, but for those that didn't, I'm sorry. This is fucking funny. So please.
I'm waiting for it to load because the mailbox is doing that thing where it wants to take 5 years to load any of the emails.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just so ridiculous. Like, it'll sometimes be just fine, and sometimes it'll be like, oh, I'm going to take forever.
Let me get some other comments in chat while we're waiting. DJ Rama S in chat says, we need Namco cross Capcom while we're at it. Didn't that end up being a tactical thing? Or am I getting my wrong cross on? I thought there was a Namco tactical game that was, I don't know, anyway.
They have a Capcom. I don't remember
Project
what it's called, yeah.
X-Zone? Cross-Zone?
Yeah, that was it. Project Cross-Zone. Yeah. SSJ100 Matt wants to know, what's the status on Jamie getting that arcade one-up machine with Strider? Who, by the way, I tweeted that clip of Jamie's goddammit moment from the last episode, which is a great clip. You can check it out, twitter.com/OLR. Arcade one-up liked the tweet. I'm sorry. That made me fucking laugh for like 5 minutes, and I had to text message Jamie, like, guess who saw your goddammit?
And I had to use it to ask for a Polestar and Blazing Star.
I know. Of course you did.
So the email finally loaded. I just found your podcast, Orange Lounge Radio, and wanted to reach out to say welcome to the podcasting world. I've been a podcast host for years and wanted to send you 5 things I wish I knew when I started podcasting. These 5 things will help you avoid some mistakes I made and hopefully help you succeed much faster than I did. Feel free to respond if there's anything I can do to help you out. Have a great day. My reply, fuck you. Replying to it.
You can.
Oh, I'm sorry, but we've been doing this for 19 years.
Then they'll know we read it. My reply.
Red receipts come anyway, Rob.
Not if you disacknowledge them. But anyway, look, here's the thing. It was fucking funny. I'm making fun of this. I don't want to, because I want to walk a fine line here. I don't want to sound like egotistical or know-it-alls just because we've been doing it so long. But I am going to say,
we've earned the right.
a little bit. But I am going to say, what I'm making fun of here is the audacity of this spammer to not even do some basic research to figure out who they were emailing, to be like, oh, I've been a podcast host for years. Welcome to podcasting, bitch. We were here before podcasting was even on iTunes, when it was still Lemon Potter. Okay, so how long have you been a host? Okay, so yes, I'm going to play that card with a spammer, with a real person. I'm not going to do that, but I thought this might beg a fun question, and because we give the information for free and not making you click to our website full of, which I'm sure I didn't click because I didn't want them seeing that I read it, but I'm sure it's full of spam and banner ads and bullshit. Since we have been doing it as long as we have, what are your five tips? Or I should say our, because I don't expect all one of us going to come up with five. What are our five things we wish we knew when we started? So I'm going to one-up the spammer is what I'm doing by giving away the information right now from somebody who has the receipts that we've been doing this for 19 years. What are the five things you wish you knew when you started podcasting?
How to make money doing it. still figuring that one out.
I'll say one. Don't be afraid of change, because change is going to happen, especially when you're talking about technology, which podcasting is a technology. That technology is going to change, and sometimes you have to be willing to ride with those changes, and that is a call that I have not always gotten right here on OLR, and I've been very open about this. We should have moved to Twitch sooner than we did, a lot sooner than we did. In the interest of fairness, we did. You may forget, or you may not know, we tried the Justin TV thing back in like 2010, 2011, and we didn't go back. And in retrospect, we should have, and we did that because we changed studios, and we didn't think in retrospect, that was a bad call. We should have kept going with the video, and eventually, the rest of the internet would catch up with us. But I think we should have made the move to Twitch a lot sooner, for what we do. And of course, Twitch doesn't work for every podcast, but for what we do, it does. So that would be my general advice, is don't be afraid of change and making changes to your show to suit what is going on in the world. So that's another one. Some comments in chat. Bobby says, you make an NES game and sell it to your audience. That's how you make money. Branded thing, vognetwork.com/shop. Branded items. It helps. Bobby also says, most people don't make money from the podcast itself. They make money from other ventures that are related to the podcast and are marketed to the podcast audience. Yes.
Or sponsorships.
Yes. Now, I'm going to steal this one from Act Deft, just in the way I'm sure this guy's five things list was just copy-pasted from somewhere else. I'm going to copy-paste what Act Deft says because I agree with it. Don't be discouraged of having a small audience. Bingo. That is absolutely one of the five things you need to note. There's going to be some weeks where one person listens. But you know what? One person listened to what you have to say. And if you are doing it to have thousands of listeners, or if you're doing it to make money out the gate, I'm here to tell you, you're podcasting for the wrong reason. And you might want to get out. Celebrity, and this is why I'm not always a fan of celebrities getting into podcasting. Some of them do it right. Some of them don't do it right. The ones that are motivated by money are not doing it right. And we all know that. Yeah. And they don't stick around. So anyway.
I'm motivated by spite.
Jamie, I want to make sure you get a tip in here. So I think we're up to three. What's one of your tips?
Learn to grow some thick skin. And I hate that it's necessary. But I've gotten some things that went from laughably misogynist to grossly threatening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all because I am a female presenting person who has very strong opinions and will say them on the internet in a community that is typically male dominated, even though we are 50% like almost to the number of gamers in the world. And I could probably school some of these little children. So it's, you got, the biggest thing to remember is that these people don't actually know you. They know a version of you that you project. And some people are fortunate enough, I would say, to get to know the real person behind the podcast, you know, and we all do it. I mean, I think to an extent, while we try to be genuine, there's still this sort of persona, I guess, that we evoke when we're podcasting, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's voice projection or trying to stay, you know, I'm trying to keep our demeanor a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and me, I certainly am a lot more ranty on this show, I think. I don't know, I'm pretty ranty anyway, but I will, I think, say things that maybe be a little bit less tactful on the show for the sake of getting an idea across, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, would this be a conversation that I would have with just, I mean, a lot of us, we have had these conversations, so that, uh-huh. that part's legit. And I really think that I try to be as real as possible, but there's some things, a part of a persona that you still have to project to protect the private self that you are.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Like when I go out as a sister, I've got my face on, I have my habit on, I have my veil, I'm, you know, dressed cute in a really freaking weird way. But that persona, it's still me. I'm still care about the people I work with, but it's going to be a more boisterous, outgoing version of myself. Same, you know, with doing the show. When I'm in person with people, I think I go through my quiet periods where it's just a little bit too much. You know what I mean? Well, you mm-hmm. you know this because you know me.
Yeah.
And a lot of you guys on here have talked to me on, you know, Twitter and everything. But I think that there needs to be a part of yourself that you're always going to keep private and not publish as much. And so when you do that, you have to understand that some of the feedback that's coming back isn't on who you are at the core of your person, but who the persona that you've projected is, who the people that others see. It's like that philosophy that there's like the three things that make you who you are. One of them is how you see yourself. The other is how other people see you. And the truth is somewhere in between.
Yep. And that goes back to the whole perception thing that I talked about. It doesn't matter what the facts are. It matters perception. And that's true of a lot of things, in this world.
Well, and of course the other thing too, and like they're saying a lot in chat here, is that if you love doing podcasting, don't look at it as your job.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not going to make money on this right away. Like, you know, my little, well, like I've got my blog that I'm putting together. I actually put it on hold for very personal reasons, and I'm glad it's not my job, or mm-hmm. else I would be, you know, I would be starving by now, but I've had health concerns come up, you know, and the big thing is that on the show, I think that we're very much don't let them see you sweat, but let them hear you roar.
Hmm. I like that. And I, you know, just to go back to your main point, you know, where that all started about the whole, like, you know, you have to have a thick skin to do this. I do agree. I would say with that, though, like you're going to have to be aware there's always going to be haters. And there's a couple ways you can take that. You can take it. I love this saying that Ronnie, one of my friends, gave me, and he was on a reality TV show once. He was portrayed as the villain. He was not, he did not get a very nice edit when the whole thing was said and done. And he had plenty of share of his haters when it was done. And he gave me this quote that I've always held on to, and I love it. And the quote is, "Let haters be your motivators." And I think that's, you know, one way you can kind of do it. But I
told you I'm motivated by spite.
Yeah, I know. But there is, you know, and as much as I love that quote, I will say, this is a very difficult skill. I refuse to respond to haters. And it's easier said than done. Because sometimes you want to go to these haters and you want to, you've all seen that Jay and Silent Bob movie, right? Where they critique the movie online and Jay wants to go, right, "Fuck you, you fucking fuck. You are the ball lickers," and that whole thing, right?
You are the ones who are the ball lickers. That was a whole thing, like responding to an angry thing. And you want to do that, but I'm not going to waste time responding to haters, because I got such more out of it that 15 minutes we spent earlier tonight talking about some of these issues that matter to us, and you guys going, wow, I'm loving this. This is a teachable thing for me. Please go off. Go off, sis. Preach. TED Talk. That is the reward I get for doing this show. I don't get that if I spend 15 minutes telling a hater why they're an idiot. Okay? So as much as I understand RuPaul says some stupid shit sometimes, RuPaul got famous because either she or somebody is ghostwriting some amazing phrases for her, and one of the best of all time, and it is, unless they're paying your bills, pay them bitches no mind. And that is it. You know, I completely understand if you have issues with RuPaul because she puts her foot in her mouth a lot, but that one,
I'm tracking.
You can take that to the bank and cash it. That is a very true to life quote.
Or
absolutely.
What other people think of you is none of your business.
Yes. So, and that's my thing. I don't respond to haters. I'm not gonna waste my time with you. Now, there's a difference between feedback and haters, but you'll notice when people come into our chat, and unfortunately, because we are on Twitch, it does happen. You get people that come into chat, N-word, F-word, fancy-ass guy word, if you know what I mean. And those types of words we don't tolerate. It's the policy of the moderator team. Take out the trash immediately. And that's what they do. And you know what we do here on air? We don't say a goddamn thing about it. That's why I love the moderator teams. They're there to take out the trash before it starts to smell.
Now, I do like a little bit of trolling sometimes. A little bit of trolling. Mostly I save it for my own Twitter.
Yes. On your own time, yes. You do
on my own time.
Yes.
But I don't do anything of the sort, like on the feedback places, none of that. I'll give people like a little bit of shit, you know, like if it's, you know, good-natured ribbing, there's a different story. But yeah. I mean, I don't have time for any of that. Their opinion means nothing to me.
Yeah.
They don't know who I am. They don't know who any of us really are. They haven't been with us through the whole ride.
Yeah.
You know, if they had been with us from the beginning and suddenly just like, okay, I'm completely done. I'm fed up. I don't like who you are anymore. You know, I honestly, if it was like a friend, I would be like, okay, well, why do you feel this way? What happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But if it's just like some person who listened to an episode and then decided to take a shit all over the iTunes reviews.
Yeah.
I don't care. I really don't.
You know, like it, there, again, there's a difference between feedback and haters. Like if somebody comes to me and says, Rob, last week's episode was really like, it was not great to listen to because like Jamie's audio was really low compared to you. And like something weird was going
is
on
it?
There. What? No, I'm making something up.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, oh shit. Was it? Oh my gosh. Okay. I need to look into that. Sorry about that. Like, thanks for sticking with it though. You know? And I like, okay, I need to listen to that. Like shit, something's wrong. So I'm going to see what's going on there. But if somebody comes to me and says, it sends an anonymous email from an account going, you should fire Jamie because she's a bitch and no one likes her. And this happened early on in the show, early on, years ago in the show.
Okay. You know, the sandwich thing.
Yeah, or whatever. She'd get back in the sandwich me. I'm just going to be like, delete, trash, block, because that's what it is. It's trash. And so you know where trash goes? The trash bin.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about it. Anyway.
And you want to, I'll tell you what's actually pretty funny. Is what I was telling my mom whenever she would want to talk about the tyrant.
Uh-huh.
And I'd be like, oh, mom, how's everything in your food disposal going? What's at the bottom of your trash can? Like, well, why are you asking that? Because I feel the same way when you bring that up to me. But it's the same thing. It's so beneath any of us. They're trying to get a rise and they're just not important enough to get it.
Anyway, okay. I that was four tips, but
have
you know what?
Email.
It was enough material to be like 20. So there you go. On the house. All right, let's get to the other email though. That was too much time spent on a spam email, but it was too good. I had to get that out. All right.
It was potential. It had potential. Evening, everyone. I had planned to send a detailed email about my gaming predictions, but instead I have another question instead. Ron-chan, proofread.
He was trying to get it in before the buzzer. Cut him some slack.
What are y'all favorite DDR Beatmania pop music songs to play and listen to? I recently realized that I haven't played any Be Money games because of the pandemic, and I actually miss it. That's all. Keep it chill, y'all. Ranma. Hearts, Chan, hearts.
I know what Facebook post inspired this because I almost replied to it. So thank you for sending it over here. Can you state the actual question? What songs do you miss, or what was your favorite? I'm sorry, I missed
your favorites.
Your favorite. Oh, Nick, Please Not So Quick from DDR Third Mix, and just pretty much anything erotic in general, because it was so stupid, fluffy, dumb, and that's what DDR music should be. That's when it's great. Like, I just, that was my favorite stuff, was the just idiotic Europop songs that I adore to this day.
It was my favorite to play for a very long time, just because I like the song.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved the bass stuff. What was, oh God, why can't I remember? DDR solo bass. Yeah. I liked, for Beatmania, I still kind of giggle at 3-2-1 Stars. I still like, God, why can't I think of the song now?
I will just say quickly, sorry.
Get Busy.
Beatmania 2. Oh, Jack and Mark Get Busy?
That's Jack and Mark Beatmania, Get Busy, yeah. That was it. I remembered Mark, and then I was like, who's the other guy?
Beatmania 2DX, my favorites by far. I always played as a warm-up song, The Beauty of Silence. I loved that song when there was a 8th style machine over at Scania. But my favorite 2DX song of all time is Flotation by Vincent D'Amour.
I remember when I would play with Jessica, and we would do all the Orange Lounge ones and try to perfect score them. Remember?
Yep.
And we did 3 in a row, as I recall.
Good times.
Yeah, that was always pretty fun. But I really am a big fan of this style. Just has some really good stuff.
Man.
And as for poppin' music, I always start with the same song every fucking time that the machine has it, the Gatchaman Nota, the theme to Gatchaman. And I sing with it, and you have witnessed this.
Oh, yeah.
Da-da-da, 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 da-da-da.
Yeah. Even I know the fucking song at this point.
Well, but the first three lines are da-da-da, who is it, who is it, who is it?
All right. Loki, you got to answer this, too.
Let's see. So, probably, you know, DDR, I was playing mostly extreme. So, I like D2R, Dance Dance Revolution, Fantasy from Max 2 Fantasy. When I got, you know, my machine with all the songs in it, Moving On from 5th Mix.
You know, 5th Mix Ghost is so underrated.
From Max, Vincent D'Amour. Back when we were playing 4th, probably Rock Beat and Dynamite Rave and Stomp to My Beat. And I don't know. We used to play a lot of those 4s and 5s because that was back when we were like learning that stuff. So
any song from Ultramix 2. Any song from Ultramix 2 when they did the different drum music. Like, that's how I discovered Echo Image with Skulk. And just, oh my God, that was such a, like, those Xbox DDR games did not get the credit they deserved.
I can't believe, though, that I left out, like, my favorite Bimani song of all time.
Brilliant to You, Brilliant. Orchestral Groove.
Orchestral Groove.
I knew it. I was like, why isn't she saying BTU? All right.
2nd Mix was so good and so underrated.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we could do a whole 3-hour show just on this discussion alone. And we have. So, but thank you for the email. I appreciate that. And, I appreciate the comment a minute ago. I think it was SSGO1 or Matt said, y'all are stellar for turning a troll spam email into a heartfelt, awesome discussion. Thank you. I felt there was a good discussion in that email. That's why I insisted Jamie read it anyway.
And thanks to Solo 2000, now I do drugs. So
that's
okay then.
What Loki? Only one person in chat is going to understand why that's funny. Loki just did a throwback to the very first news story we ever covered on OLR. And that was that some girl, adult, I don't remember, some person, some individual was taking issue with some of the imagery in DDR Solo saying it promoted drug use. And so I think we spent 3 hours talking about all the drugs we've done because of DDR.
How about all the drugs I've done as a result of playing DDR?
All right.
Some painkillers, put some lidocaine patches.
Tylenol.
Marijuana.
Take some. Take some. Oh no, I'm old and broken enough for the prescriptions, Rob.
All right. I think we need to get to moving to wrapping things up here. It's getting to be after 9 o'clock here on the West Coast, so I know we got to wrap up the show. But thank you so much for the emails. Please send us more. Participate@orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send us emails. Let's quickly see if there's any last minute stories. Loki, Darsak, I'll check in with you guys.
Not really. There wasn't anything worth noting, I guess.
Okay. Sorry, I have a Mr. Smush in the studio, and sadly he's on ground level. I'm trying to get him up, but he's looking at the camera like, I want to knock that over. And I'm like, the fuck you will, buddy. All right. Oh, now he's looking at his other dad in the kitchen prepping dinner. All right.
Oh, Midna's on a diet.
Oh, really?
Midna gained a pound.
Uh-oh. Oh, I know somebody else who's a pound overweight, but...
Oh. She's all supposed right. to be right around 12, and she's at 13, and she's going to be 8 years old this year, so she's mm-hmm. kind of an old lady.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got to watch her waistline.
Well, we had to take our cat to the vet because she was all stuffed up and super congested.
Aww.
And so they gave her medicine for that. That's, but
That's Mr. Smush every day, and they're just like, that's just her cat.
So I've been trying to get her fattened up.
Well, Midna actually has to take human allergy medicine. I forgot what it's called, but it's, I have to put half a pill in her mouth every morning. And she's like, okay, feed me. You must appease me, human.
All right.
Our children, our fur babies.
Our babies. All right. Let's go around and get everybody's final thought. This show's been running on a long time. We have a few people in chat who are like, I'm going to bed. I'll check out the rest of the podcast. Let's wrap it up and get final thoughts. Great episode, though, you guys. Thanks, as always, for being here and being a part of the show. Thank you, as always. If you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, please help us spread the word. Tell a friend or two about the show. We are the show where every gamer has a voice. But if the voices aren't here, then we can't get all those voices out on air. So please consider spreading the word about our show. Auto hosts on Twitch. Oh, my gosh. They go such a long way, and we really appreciate it. Please keep those hosts coming. Super duper appreciate those. And a nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes or wherever it is you found this podcast, Spotify, whatever. Those all go a very long way. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Sharing on social media. I love that. Always appreciate that stuff. Thank you. Thank you. If you want to support the show financially, thank you so much to all the subscribers and other donators. I'll acknowledge you guys after the show is done tonight. But thank you, everybody on Twitch. You can also check out our shop over at VogNetwork.com/shop, where we have some OLR branded merchandise and Vogue Network merchandise. And our pal, Bobby Blackwolf, has some stuff for his show, too. So you can check that all out. We'll be adding to that throughout the year. Okay, that's enough. Let's get to our actual final thoughts. I will start tonight by saying, did y'all notice that I'm wearing Loki and Jamie can't really see me, but the listeners can. So I'm wearing a t-shirt that says Fever Time. So I'm throwing it back pre-DDR tonight. And I miss this game an awful lot. Bust a move or bust a groove, depending on where you played your games, where your games came from. So I'm going to just give a shout out to that legendary series as my final thought. Loki, I'll go to your final thought.
I forgot to mention this week when I was developing my game, I made a dog. We have dogs now that eat poop, so that's an accomplishment for this week.
Congratulations. Last but not least, Star Soccer, your final thought.
So I found the story when we posted after Shermie died, because we were talking about how old Midna is.
Uh-huh.
And Shermie died October 2012.
Oh, wow.
So in Midna, I got her right after that.
Yeah.
So 2013. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she was 9 months old when I got her. She turned one around my birthday, and she's going to be a 9-year-old. Runma and I were talking about it.
Time flies.
Oh,
time flies.
Shermie. She used to sit on our feet.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget when we were talking about The Tester, that Sony reality show. And Shermie just decides to crap on the floor and left her own review of the show. And that forever to this day will slay me.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you know that one of the last things she did before she died was poop in Dan's shoe.
Yeah, yes. All right. Let's yes, let's think back fondly and remember our kitty friends that have left us. But let's also look forward to a great gaming week. Have a wonderful week, everybody. We'll see you again in 7 days. Let's do this again next week. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right, great.
Do it.
Bye, everyone. Have a wonderful night. See you next time.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.